It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannocco, Alex Lindsay, and I are very pleased to welcome James Thompson, filling in for Jason Snell this week. You know James is the author of pCalc. He's going to give us the developer's eye view on everything Apple announced at WWDC. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 875, recorded Tuesday, June 20th, 2023. Nobody needs Antarctica. This episode of Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by AG1 by Athletic Greens. If you're looking for a simpler and cost-effective supplement routine, AG1 is giving you a free one-year supply of vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase of a subscription. Go to athleticgreens.com/MacBreak. And by Melissa. More than 10,000 clients worldwide rely on Melissa for full-spectrum data quality and ID verification software. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. And by ZocDoc. When you're not feeling your best and just trying to hold it together, finding great care should not take up all your energy. Go to ZocDoc.com/MacBreak and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. Many are available within 24 hours. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news. I'm going to introduce our special guest in a moment, but first let's say hello to Alex Lindsay from Office Hours and 090.media. Hello, Alex. The man with the best shot in the world, the most beautiful. Your background is getting richer and more beautiful all the time.
It's mostly just junk back there. The best thing is you have a short depth of field, so you can't see that I'm just throwing junk on the
fuzzy junk. That's
like, I got this stuff, and
that's the key.
It's back there. Exactly.
Blurry junk. Or
exactly.
Do what Andy Iannocco does and just get a Shoji screen. No one will know.
There you go.
Hi, Andy.
Again, how messy is my office back there?
No one knows.
Saying. You're not going to find out from there. What I like about Alex is that it you're getting the vibe of like a late 1980s, early 1990s cable news channel sort of thing, where there's just, look how busy we got so many busy things in our newsroom. It's dimly lit, but you can see by the number of screens that we're not doing this on the cheap. We've hired lots of people, really, honestly. We're watching lots of television to get you to the
news. An intern wanders through, then says, "Ooh, I'm on camera," and ducks out.
It's mostly full of things that used to be worth a lot of money. They're all.
That's exactly what
they've all. It's the wall of depreciation.
Things that used to be the wall of depreciation.
Look upon my works and despair, says this $10,000 workstation.
I mean, this camera right here was $250,000.
Oh,
this camera right here was $60,000, and they're all worth like hundreds now.
You're the Ozymandias of PCs.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, let's say hello. Jason Snell's got the week off because, as he mentioned last week, we're so proud of him and his daughters graduating from college, and he's there up there doing that. But we took this as an opportunity to get the great James Thompson on for a pCalc fame. Hi, James.
Hi. I'm always pleased to shift the average age down a bit for this show.
Thanks a lot. You're gray too, dude. Don't be blowing any horns. James is legendary when did you first start developing was it Mac that you started with or iOS that you started
with? Yeah, I started Mac. The first pCalc shipped in December 92, so it's well over 30 years old at this point. So that should give you a baseline for how old I am. I'm only 2 years younger than Jason, so I can't actually throw many.
So you did shift it down, though. That's good. That's good.
Yeah. I mean, mathematically, yes.
Spiritually,
no.
Emotionally.
No. You got to leverage that. I have older sisters, and like, I'm only like 2 years younger than like the next youngest one. But according to like Time Magazine or whatever, she's technically a baby boomer and I'm technically Generation X. you boomers, I can't be fixing your phone all the time. Okay. I can't keep explaining to you how America Online works. Switch.
I have to ask James if your breath caught, as many of us did during Apple's event a couple of weeks ago, when they said, "And finally, we're releasing an app we should have released long ago for the iPad," and everybody literally
I genuinely, I held my breath for the like couple of seconds. I mean, like, I'd posted to Mastodon earlier in the day. I said, like, I will be genuinely surprised if they don't release a calculator these days, because it's such low hanging fruit and they get such stick for it. But no, they didn't. So
it was health. But we were all thinking calculator. James is going to get Sherlocked, but you wouldn't get Sherlocked because yours is so much superior than anything Apple would do.
Well, I mean, I think the thing is, like, the platforms that we sell the most on is phone and Mac, where there's a calculator already. So it doesn't actually matter.
Yeah.
You know, they shipped a calculator on the watch even. you know, I had a bet with somebody that they would ship a calculator on the headset before they shipped it on the iPad, but it seems like they're not doing that.
The Vision Pro calculator. You just look at a number and it adds it in.
You want to be surrounded by your numbers, really.
Yeah, that's it. 3D numbers. Well, anyway, we're glad you didn't get Sherlock. And I think that's actually, I'm going to interpret it as a little tip of the hat to you, that we don't need to do a calculator on the iPad because there is the best calculator ever already there.
I think that most of Apple product marketing has no idea who I am. And the people who do know who I am don't think of me fondly.
Oh, no, that's not. At Apple, you mean? Well, I know that feeling. Good Lord.
I once talked to Craig Federighi at WWDC, and I was sort of giving him the background on myself, and I started to say who I was and sort of tell some anecdote. And he looked at me and he said, "I've heard you tell that story on a podcast." And I thought,
oh, wow.
The only podcast that I have told that on was Debug, where I said a lot of fairly negative things about my time at Apple. So, oh dear.
Oh dear. That was a very interesting backhanded way of saying, I know you.
If we get on to talking about widgets, that was certainly something that I was known for. 9 years ago, as it
turns. Good. We will talk about widgets. We'll talk about everything because I wanted to bring, I said to John Ashley, our producer, it would be great to get a developer on and get their take on everything that happened at WWDC. You're the perfect person for it. I guess I should ask you first what you think of the Vision Pro. I mean, are you going to do pCalc for the Vision Pro?
I mean, yes.
you'll do DICE for sure because DICE actually makes sense.
Like, so I was playing, as many people know, the pCalc about screen kind of went a bit berserk and
this
3D game and all that sort of stuff. And all that was, I started it because I wanted to learn about 3D graphics because there were rumors like 7 years ago about the headset. So I wanted to have an idea about 3D graphics. And so, yeah, I mean, like, as it stands, if I do nothing, the app will still run on the Vision Pro because it will run iPad apps. But it seems like there isn't actually, like, to get it running as a native Vision Pro app, there's not much work I need to do. I actually did most of the work last year. And I think with pCalc, you know, the thing that I think about when they showed it off was like one of the first apps they showed off was Microsoft Office, which is like the least kind of whiz bang 3D thing that they could have led with. And I think what they were saying there is like any app that you would want on your computer or your iPad or your phone or whatever is the kind of app you want to have on this device. And so, yeah, I mean, I'll do pCalc for it. But as you say, DICE, I've even got an AR mode in that already. And I haven't tried it, but maybe that actually even does something already on the Vision Pro when you launch it in AR mode.
How close was your guess, since you developed this before it came out, as to what the API, the SDK would look like?
My guess was that they were going to cut off all the old technologies and they were going to say no UI kit, things like that. And they were going to say Swift UI only for the whole thing. And they didn't actually do that. What they said was you can use UI kit, but we will judge you for doing so. and, you know, some things might not work quite as well, but the stuff is there and it will work. The only API that didn't really make the cut was SceneKit, which is actually what I used for the 3D stuff initially with Peacocks About and with Dice. That can't display 3D content. Like, it can display it flat in a window, but that doesn't work. So they actually brought across more than I thought they would, and I'm sure they will cut that off pretty soon. But it means, like, because if you're getting iPad apps, existing ones over, they needed to have most of that stuff there anyway in terms of UI kit and things. So, yeah, I mean, I was pleasantly surprised by that. I was quite surprised by the price.
Higher than you thought, or lower? I'm going to guess higher, but...
Higher, because when there was the rumors saying, oh, it's going to be $3,000 that were floating around beforehand, and everybody was saying, yeah, this is just going to be like the iPad again, where,
right,
we all think it's going to be $3,000, but then they come out, they say it's $2,000, and we go, wow, that's so cheap. wouldn't be cheap. And so when they said 3.5, I audibly swore, I will not repeat what I said. I understand it. You know, I totally understand. This is not a device that anyone is actually really intended to buy. You know, this is...
Well, you are, I should point out.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I will.
And I suppose we are.
Yeah, I think it's the first device. You know, it's so that people like me can make stuff, people like you can write about it and experience it, and you know, some rich tech bros will buy it as well. And you know, we will.
And there's your 100,000 a quarter right there, 100,000.
And we'll see how it goes, because you know, like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, that I think is the product that people will be buying. I don't think this is like the iPad, where you know they want to get this into as many hands as possible. And so it's priced accordingly. This is like, we're going to build the absolute best thing with no compromises whatsoever to show what can be done. And then we'll get down to actually selling it to regular human beings at some point in the future. So another thing that I should say, not wishing to monopolize the conversation, I'm having problems with my eyes, and I have done for the last year, basically chronic dry eye stuff. So I find it difficult to look at screens for a long time. I have no idea whatsoever if strapping one of these things to my face is going to be better or worse than looking at a normal screen. My guess is it's going to be much worse. So I come to this with the unusual, like, I want to develop apps for this. I have no idea if I'll be able to use it.
Interesting. So, yeah. Yeah.
That is a kind of, you know, if this is the future of computing, truly, if I can't use it, then, well, I guess I retire.
Yeah.
We'll see. Also, I have no idea how this thing works in terms of glasses. Like, where is the focal point of this thing when you're looking through it? Because I haven't heard a specific answer to that. Because like all the like Oculus, I've got many VR headsets, too many, my wife may say. I've got like the Quest and PlayStation VR 2, all these things. And most of them, the focal point for that is kind of like 2 meters plus away. So it's, if you need glasses for distance, then you need that as your prescription to look at the thing. But even if you're looking at something up close in the headset, it's still got the focal point of far away, because these things won't shift focus as you change as you look at things. So I need glasses for computer screens, which are, you know, like up to a meter away. And I don't need glasses for stuff that's 2+ meters away. So I don't know if I'm going to need to get, glasses for it, how it's going to work. So there's a lot of unanswered questions, but I really want to try it.
Right.
I was not flown out by Tim Cook to try my Dice app on it, sadly.
I should have started by asking you how the burnout's going, because I have to say, when you posted that blog post almost 2 years ago now, I was like, oh my God, James, we had no idea.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think I sort of passed through the burnout and I got to a place, particularly when my eyes were giving me the most trouble. And I was like, I've reached a more zen position of like, I'm going to do what entertains me and makes me happy. And I'm not going to sort of like push myself madly to,
good.
I mean, like I say this, and I said this the last couple of years, like I'm not going to push myself to have everything ready on day one and to ship with this device on day one or to do this on day one. I have done it every single time, but you know, I'm at least starting to think.
You're famous for maybe, that actually. Like we
I know,
say,
that's the thing.
Well, let's see if James has it when it ships. And always you do. And, yeah.
I mean, the thing with pCalc specifically is the core code of pCalc, like the actual brain of it, is super portable.
Of course.
And it's very small.
It's just math.
So I can stuff that anywhere. And all it needs is like button presses in and text out. So that is very easy to put in places. So when it's something like, you know, if we talk about widgets or even this thing, it's not super hard to put stuff on and to have something there. But yeah, it will be, you know, if you see me working way too hard to get something out for day one for this headset, you can tell me to slow down.
Okay, good. I hope you will tell yourself to slow down and your family will also tell you, slow down, James. It's okay. I will tell you this right now. If you don't get it out the day iOS 17 ships, we'll be okay with that. It's fine.
I know people will, but it's just that self-imposed.
Yeah, that's what it is, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of burnout, Mr. Alex Lindsay, you should probably listen to what James is saying, Alex. And I don't know. Alex is working every moment of his waking life, which is about 18, 19, 20 hours a day, I think.
You know, I pace myself better now. I just don't travel as much. You know, I think that's the big thing is that I was doing, the travel was what was really nailing me. And now that I'm pretty resistant to it, I spoke at InfoComm last week without actually going.
you just Zoom now. Everybody Zooms. And I would think, James, you wrote that blog post in the middle of the pandemic. I would think the pandemic actually might have made it worse because you've always been, you know, homebound in a way. Just...
like I can't actually leave the house. I want to point out.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, but you know,
I have.
You don't have an office to go to, or do you? I don't know.
No, I mean, like this. This is the spare bedroom in our place, and it's. I've been here 23 years in this very room, cranking out code. So, hence why you can see on the shelves behind me things like original Halo in its box.
I thought I saw that, but then I thought, oh, must be dreaming. That's
now great. It's like that's looking awesome. Behind me. I can see Halo, some Star Wars games, some like
great.
Age of Empires. It's just because I haven't cleaned the shelves up. That's it.
Well, they're pretty tidy looking. They look good. They're not.
It's not quite as curated as some of the other people, shall we say, on the show.
Sometimes people put it in color order. You could do that, maybe. I think that's a little weird, personally. Actually, I think about losing your eyesight as for a coder. That's got to be the worst possible outcome for me, losing my hearing. And as my hearing deteriorates, you know, I realize it's, you know, your life, your life work is at risk. So that's, I understand that's scary.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not losing my sight as such, like at least currently, you know, it's just, I'm limited in the time that I can look at computer screens and phones. So I have to kind of choose that carefully,
which might be a good thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it is a good thing. And I've actually, one of the things that came out of this is I started to read books again, which is something that I kind of fell off for 20 years and I'm now way back into it.
Oh, good.
And it's like, I thought my attention span had permanently atrophied to the point that I couldn't sit down and read a book, but apparently I can. So, you know, like I'm okay. You know, there were points certainly in the last year where I was, you know, genuinely thinking, you know, I got my Mac loaded Mac Studio. I ordered it. And then by the time it arrived, I was starting to have like first symptoms of stuff. And I was thinking, why did I order this, you know, like £5,000 computer? I don't even know if I'll be able to use the thing. But
and when fine. He says pounds, I just for our American audience, it's not weight.
No, I mean, those things are pretty heavy, but not that heavy.
I bought the new MacBook Pro, and I thought I'd bring it in for a show, and not MacBook Pro, MacBook Air for show and tell, the 15-inch. And, you know, I'm sad because it's unfortunate, but on Mastodon, Stammy, Paul Statamayo said, well, because I was saying how nice I thought the screen was, and he said, well, how does that compare to the XDK screens on the MacBook Pro, which my wife has, a MacBook M2 MacBook Pro Max with 64 gigs of RAM, 14-inch. So I put them side by side, and now I don't like it anymore. I want the MacBook Pro. I'm like, oh, man, it really is crisp and nice and beautiful. So
that is like the one time I got bumped up to first class on a flight, and that just ruined air travel for the rest of my life.
Because you had a Mac. Wait, why?
I don't know. I was flying on Apple's dime at that point. So, maybe there's a flag that says possible Apple VIP. Not really.
I'll never forget going to a lounge. I think we were flying to England. And I don't remember which lounge it was. Maybe the British Airways lounge. And Johnny Ive was going to be in the lounge. And they had roped off an area with a velvet rope. And they had... And they had balloons, and they had his welcome, Sir Johnny. I mean, it was VIP central. It was bizarre. And everybody's trying to sneak a peek of Sir Johnny in his private lounge.
You're telling me that you don't get balloons?
No, I don't get balloons. I don't get nothing.
I'm sad.
I do remember that day because I couldn't find my ticket. I had a Scott E vest on, and I had too many pockets. I was going... Where is it? I know it's in here somewhere. I finally did find it. We were okay.
So Johnny Ive just saw this quite distressed person in the corner.
Yeah,
so
wearing a safari jacket, thinking, oh, I don't know.
And instantly texted Steve saying, what if we could put boarding passes direct on a handheld device?
I'm never doing this again.
Because of me. Yeah, exactly. all right. I would like to very much talk about the new operating systems. But please, I don't want to leave Andy and Alex out. So please, guys, jump in. I'm sure you have questions for James. I know you know James probably better than I do. So I don't want to make this all on James's poor shoulders.
No, not going to put too much of a burden on his shoulders. But this is, like, as you say, an opportunity.
Yeah,
Jason's not here, so we have Paul McCartney on, but we don't want to talk all about music or, you know, societal change since the 60s.
Right.
Hey, Andy, how you doing on that Raspberry Pi project? Like, I want to know about the rooftop concert.
What? I mean, I like the fact that you're comparing me to Paul McCartney.
you are the cute one.
I'll take that. I will say my opinion of Paul McCartney went up enormously after watching all of that Get Back documentary.
Yes. Wasn't that amazing?
And it was like, oh, he really did have to corral all these people and he was doing all this work. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, so that was one thing about that.
John comes in with Yoko. The other thing is my opinion of Yoko went up, that she wasn't the evil wife breaking up the Beatles there. She just was sitting there knitting. But really, the problem was they were both on heroin. John and Yoko were completely zoned out on heroin.
It's funny that Ringo just seemed to be happy to be there.
Ringo was happy. George was a little cranky, and Paul was trying to wrangle them all.
George is the one that brought the 24 track. He had like the crazy 24 track recorder that took like a electrical engineer to run. You know, like there was this one kid who knew how to run it, and he's the only one that had to run it. And it was like this very complex. Yeah, it's a really great documentary. Like, you think, like, when Peter Jackson did it, you were like, I don't know why he did that. Like, it seemed like a really deep dive. And now you want, I haven't seen the long version, but I'm.
Oh, I've watched it all many. What is it? 13
it's
hours.
Worth. Yeah. I put it on in the background.
Exactly.
You're just kind of hanging out.
With the Beatles. Yeah.
Watching them compose songs in like 30 seconds. And
those are the moments when Paul sits down and says, well, let me noodle on the piano and Let It Be comes out. Or, you know, they're trying to figure out what Get Back is going to be. And just watching them compose a song.
Or even like all the extra information, just incidental information. I think, was it Paul who said that, look, this, like, that people are going to say that the Beatles broke up because Yoko sat on an amp.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
No, that's not.
Yoko was a completely benign presence the entire time. She's just reading the racing news, knitting. Every once in a while, she'd break out and, oh, but it wasn't, you know, it was welcome. Nobody was minding it. It was very
strict.
The best part is, of course, when they, we're really far afield now. It's your fault when you mentioned Paul McCartney. But the best part is when they put a microphone in the teapot in the lunch room.
Yeah.
And without their knowledge, recorded John and Paul. And Paul's really trying to keep John in the band. And it was really interesting to hear that real, very genuine dynamic when they thought they were off mic and off camera. It's a little, you know, here we are sitting there. Really? They put a microphone in the teapot? That was rude. But I'm glad they did. From thank a historical. God they did, yeah. Yeah, thank goodness. Yeah. from a historical point of view. Anyway, enough of the Beatles.
I will take the, I'm Ringo, I think, of the four.
Ringo.
I'm
okay.
Not take Paul McCartney.
Yeah, Ringo's good.
I'm Ringo. Not that.
If Ringo came on, we'd have the same questions for him. how do you consume WWDC? Do you watch a lot of the tracks?
So I'll watch like with the remote stuff. Like there's no point for a developer like me really to do the travel over for the current kind of format of the conference, because you're going to end up spending like $10,000 to sit in Apple Park and watch a video that I could also watch.
Yes, that's a good point. Yes.
And there is, you know, that it's more now than it was. Like, I think as the years go past, I think they're adding more and more like in-person stuff that is actually, I think, useful. And maybe next year is the time where I would actually go over. But so what I've done for the last couple of years is, you know, I'll sit and I'll watch the keynote and the State of the Union live and sort of, previously I would tweet out my unfiltered thoughts and now I just post them to Mastodon. It's much the same. And, you know, I will then like get the sort of high level view of everything. And then I'll see what has changed, what I think is going to impact me. Like, it's always good when you can come out of a keynote and think, I actually don't need to do anything. That is the best feeling in the entire world of like, if I do nothing, everything will still work. And it's cool, because in that situation, it's like, oh, I could actually spend some time working on features and things for the users rather than just catching up with what Apple wants this year. But I mean, so you see what the big stuff is, and then it's a case of like, watch, you know, they release a bunch of the sessions day by day. I mean, everything is recorded probably weeks beforehand now, which I think is good because it gives, you know, some of the people who are presenting who would, if I had to do it, certainly I would freak out standing in front of like 1,000 to 5,000 people having to give a very technical talk live with code which could break at a moment's notice, and that now they can at least they can have a lot of people on who are doing their things and recording their stuff. I will sit and I will watch, you know, just what interests me.
I'm curious as to I've watched probably 20 or 30 other ones from this, and usually that's about the range that I watch from WWDC. And
how many are there total? Is that like a third of the total? Or?
So many.
Yeah,
no, so there's a lot.
A lot. Okay. 30 is a lot. Sounds like a lot to me because they're each an hour long. That's a lot of hours to put in.
Yeah. There's a lot of half an hour, okay. I would say these days, or, because they make them just basically the length they need to rather than, you know, you have to fill a particular slot in a conference.
Yeah. I think there's about 100 of them, I think, somewhere in that ballpark, like 90 to 110 typically. There's typically six a day. There used to be four rooms that did them. So four rooms that did six a day. And they would have to, add to your point, most of them had to, the target was, I think, to last like 40 minutes or 45 minutes long. And a lot of times it felt like things were getting stretched out because they don't take Q&A. So it wasn't, you weren't getting any benefit from it. I have to say that I find them much more pleasurable to watch now than when they were live. The audio is much better. The imagery is much better, which is much easier to watch them, especially at speed, except in the WWDC app, which doesn't have a, I don't know, do you watch them at 1x or do you watch them faster than
they were? I watch at 1x. If I watched anything at higher speed, my brain would explode. It's just,
I go into absorption mode. So the problem with the Apple TV app is that it's a 1.5 or 2. You can always tell that someone doesn't actually watch things fast when they skip 1.75, because 1.75 is the right number for most things. And so I'm always like on the T-top of those, but I just find them to be, I felt like it's a huge jump forward as far as,
I mean, the other thing that they do in them is that they have the transcripts there immediately, which is very helpful because like I can, before I even watch a session, I can just have a quick scan through the transcript and see if it is talking about the kind of thing that I'm interested in. Sometimes it's not obvious, particularly from the title, what the level of technical complexity is going to be. I think the developer app's pretty good. I watch all the stuff at 1x anyway. But I can't watch all of it because there's so much. And if I do try and watch all of it, I will remember none of it.
and you want to watch the stuff that's germane to your program.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and some of it is also you want to watch the stuff that's like new and exciting. So like the Vision Pro stuff, that's kind of like, well, this is, how are they going to do this? You know, because you get the broad strokes in the other things, but then you get in like, how is this implemented? How, what can I do? What can't I do? So I've watched a lot of Vision Pro stuff, which is not like, we can't even order SDKs at this point. So, I have front loaded my brain with all the information that is completely useless at this point.
And may well change. I mean, I really get the feeling, I likened it on one of our shows to a concept car that you might see at an auto show. I get the feeling that when it does come out, it may be a somewhat different product. In fact, I'm betting that the scary eyes in the front will be gone. I don't think.
I think they're 100% staying. I think that's the core thing of their design, because it's like, they are nobody else has ever done it. So this thing stands
out. For good reason.
Even if it stands out in a way that I don't like.
Yeah.
But I think like, I get what they're trying to do, that they're trying to kind of make it less cutting you off from the world, and that makes sense.
But you are cut off, and putting an uncanny valley pair of eyes on the front does not make you less cut off. I'm sorry, it just makes people run away in the other direction, to be honest.
I will say I haven't tried it, so like,
yeah,
I
neither has, by the way, any Apple executive. I think it's telling that nobody wore them, which means they're not ready, right? That they're all simulated in the videos.
No, I mean, I think like, I suspect the stuff is like three quarters there. And I think that, the foundations are probably working pretty well. I mean, from the sounds of the people I know who have got demos, like the technology, like the hardware certainly was impressive.
Yeah.
Some of the software, like, I know some people that when they had their head scanned for the FaceTime thing, they didn't get a particularly pleasant looking avatar out of that. And but I could see that stuff improving. It's like, so when the iPad came out, or before the iPad came out, when it was announced and we got developer kits for it, we could write apps in the simulator. And same for the watch and same for other things. Like, we could write the apps, and we could see them on a screen and we could interact with them, but it didn't give you the sense of what it would be like to actually use the thing, which affects how you build your apps. So there is a sort of, once you're actually using it, there's a feedback process of, I'm playing with it. Oh, this makes sense to do it this way. Or this is, this thing is too far away from where your fingers would be, or this button is too small, or something. And I think there's going to be a process for this as well. It's like, once we actually get to use them and see what it's like to use them. And this is such a shift in terms of like thinking and design. I mean, in some ways it's not, because like the apps they're showing off are kind of like mostly 2D windows that you're moving around with 3D content. But I, until I have one of those things on my face and I am actively running my code on it, I am hesitant to pass judgment on it because I just don't know what it's like. And I have skepticism. I still don't know what it's for. Like, I get that this is like technologically possibly the most sophisticated piece of consumer electronics ever made, shall we say. I still don't get what it's for. But I haven't tried it. So that's the thing. I can't throw stones at it.
Yeah. Specifically about the magic eyeballs. I'm not sure that could become the touch bar of the Vision Pro. That could be the thing that, okay, we really thought this, we had something. It turns out we didn't have anything here. We're going to start to give you back all the buttons that you're complaining that you didn't have, you know.
Well, and if they're going to make a less expensive version, those screens are one way to cut a couple $100. Yeah, and but
not only that, but that's a display right at the very, very front of the device on a device that could be made lighter anyway, and you don't want weight at the front anyway. Right. Another problem is that this is, I've been reading a lot more about, what designers of night vision goggles have been learning about just the mechanics of how to design something that you wear on your face and people are going to be looking around through the world at. And another complaint that's coming through about this design is that because you have this screen that has to be has to cover the entire front plate, you can't have cameras like right where your pupils would be, which, and so they're going to be lowered like another like inch or so from where you're actually looking, which it remains to be seen how confusing that's going to be. There's a paper that I read about, again, people who are designing these things for night vision, saying that even moving these down a little bit causes a bit of confusion because the brain, it creates a whole bunch of problems where the brain adapts. And then when you take the goggles off, your brain now has to deal with the fact that there's this entirely new way of looking at the world. So there are a lot of small things about it. And a lot of these things are going to be maybe worth the expense, so to speak, because of the technology. But it really changed my mind about, again, what I have to call derisively the magic eyeball effect. That has to really now be very, very important. It has to be crucial. It has to be a signature thing that says, oh my God, Apple has figured something out here that no one else has figured out. And everybody has to start stealing this idea. It turns out to be such a great idea to have this screen facing outward to make it worth like the extra weight and the extra changes that it makes to the balance. And in my eye, I think there's a reason why they didn't demo it to anybody at all under any circumstances during WWDC.
And I'm assuming that the eyes and that the like section of face that they're displaying is the same CG face that they're capturing for FaceTime.
I think everybody thinks that it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I do think that there is going to be like that slight extra uncanny valley to that view, because if it is that, but still I haven't seen it. So I like, this could be like when I see it in person that I will go, right, I get it. This makes sense. So I'm hesitant, but curious enough that I will probably drop $3,500 to see how it works.
Well, another data point is, from Scooter X and our IRC, the Apple Vision Pro video is now the most viewed Apple video on YouTube with 50 million views in the first week. So there's certainly interest in it. People want to see it.
I mean, like, I think probably the most kind of futuristic thing they've done for a long time. I mean, like the iPhone, when we all got the iPhone, we were like, this is great. It has a great user interface. This entirely makes sense. You know, they've done like amazing things, but it's a phone. You know, we understand this. It's a touchscreen. We've kind of seen those before, not as good as this. This thing is like, oh, and here's a spaceship.
Right. They've boldly gone.
I've never flown a spaceship before. I don't know what it's like.
Right. Yeah, we don't know. That's right. And I think Apple deserves, and a lot of people give it a lot of credit for what Apple's done in the past. but this is not like anything Apple's done in the past. Well, and it is and a bit of a reach for them.
I think the pricing also helps scare off a lot of folks that aren't sure. So you're going to end up with a lot of people that are there testing it. I think that I think that they'll probably keep the eyes in some form. They're going to have to keep on developing them. I think that they're part of the interface to tell you that someone's looking at you.
Right. When they close off, I understand why they're there.
They tell you why they're not there.
But so I think it's also the thing that people are going to fixate on as being the creepiest part of it. And I think that that's something Apple's got to fight against. Hey, James, let me ask you if it's Mac OS or iOS or its own OS. You tooted the day of WWDC that it looks like they're out of sync. That iOS 17, but XROS 1.0, somebody responded to you that he didn't think it is iOS. Do you have a better sense of that now?
I'm not 100% sure. I mean, I think like any of Apple's operating systems, they're all generally, or certainly the iOS derivatives, like, you know, what's on a HomePod or what's on a watch or whatever. I think they're all kind of like, there's a lot of core stuff that's the same.
It's the mock kernel plus the base core OS. On top of that.
Yeah. And, you know, that I don't think that this is anything radically different from that, except it's got like a bunch of real-time stuff in it.
Right.
So, you know, like I think all of these OSs are related, you know, they're at least very close cousins.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. Yeah. This is the, stack that, Apple put in the keynote. And so there are iOS frameworks at the top level, as well as special frameworks that are spatial for the particular Vision Pro and the spatial audio engine, plus the foveated renderer and the multi-app 3D engine. Those are all unique to the Vision Pro. It's interesting.
Yeah, but that big core OS section at the bottom is probably the same thing everything.
Right,
Same kernel across all platforms.
Yeah, and it's mock kernel.
I think so. I mean, like even my monitor is running some, you know.
Yeah, even your studio stuff. You have a studio display, then I know.
Yes.
Your little iOS display.
Yeah.
Let's take a little break. James Thompson, our guest, pCalc's author. If you have not yet installed pCalc on your iOS, your iPad OS, and your Mac OS, go to pCalc.com and check it out. And of course, don't forget Dice. If you are a tabletop gamer, by pCalc, infinite polyhedral die, just for you, and a 3D emulator, so you can see your die rolling in AR. Our show today brought to you by. Oh, and I forgot, Alex Lindsay's also here in Antinaco. You guys are also here.
I don't mean to take this focus.
When we have somebody, when Paul McCartney or Ringo's on, we got to talk to him.
This week, James, you're Diana Ross, we're the Supreme.
You're Beyonce, we're Destiny's Child. I get it. Yeah.
I will accept those more than Paul McCartney.
Our show today brought to you by this AG1. By Athletic Greens. Love this product. Like many of you, especially during quarantine, I wanted to support my health and I ended up having a fistful of supplements that I would take every morning. But this has changed my life. AG1 from Athletic Greens. I can give my body what it craves all in one daily nutritional drink. It's the first thing I drink in the morning. So this is 12 ounces of cold water. AG1 comes, normally you'd get the packet, the big packet and the scoop, the month's supply and the canister, which comes with the full package. But I like these. I'm going to Disneyland tonight and I'm going to bring these along with me. So I have my AG1 in my travel packs. It shakes up easily. It tastes fantastic. AG1's been around for a long time, since 2010. It's become part of a million routines since. When I started doing the AG1 thing, I asked around and everybody I know, Aunt Pruitt said, oh, yeah, I've been using that for years. It's the best all-in-one solution for daily nutrition. Saves you time, confusion, money, a lot of money. I was spending a lot of money, $3 a day, a little less than $3 a day for AG1. And it's got everything. It's got supplements. It's got probiotics, prebiotics. This is the best bang for your buck. A seamless, easy daily habit that covers your day's nutritional basis. 75 high-quality minerals, vitamins, pre and probiotics. So if you're looking for a simpler and cost-effective supplement routine, AG1, my friends, from Athletic Greens. In fact, if you order right now and get a subscription, you'll get a free one-year supply of vitamin D and five free travel packs, those great travel packs, with your first purchase of a subscription. Go to athleticgreens.com/MacBreak. My mouth is actually watering because I look forward to this every morning. It tastes really good. athleticgreens.com/MacBreak. Please use that address so they know you saw it here. athleticgreens.com/MacBreak. Is there anything in iOS 17, James, you were particularly excited about or interested in? I guess you could include iPadOS as well if you want.
I think there was lots of little things that, you know.
That's how it's been for the last few years, right? It's all kind of a little incremental.
I mean, I think there was like, I genuinely said, like, by the time we got to the keynote just before the Vision Pro, like, if that had been all there was, I would have been pretty happy with the show, because like there was enough stuff, like things like, you know, the improvements to autocorrect and stuff like that. That's going to affect like billions of people.
You can finally swear with that ducking, that ducking autocorrect. Yes. Good. Finally.
And you know, there was little things like, you know, just the being able to share AirTags amongst people that is going to be so useful, so that like if, my, you know, like if I put an AirTag on my bike and my wife rides it, she's not going to get like a constant warning that she's being tracked, because
so annoying. Both,
you know, so there's lots of little things like that. But I would say like the thing that caught me the most was the return of interactive widgets, because that's, I think, going to make a lot of stuff a lot easier, in terms of, having like very quick access to doing stuff, you know, like you just want to check off a task or do something and you don't want to fire up an entire app to do it. So I have my own history with widgets.
Yes, you do.
May remember. Yes. Back in the distant past of 2014, when we got our first widgets, the first old school widgets, because they're a completely different mechanism, I built a pCalc widget, because there was a calculator widget that Apple did that was on the Mac, and they didn't do one on iOS. And I thought, well, they've done it on the Mac, so I'll do it on the Mac, and I'll do it on iOS as well. And, you know, as I said before, like the core logic of pCalc is small, self-contained. So I just stuffed it in there. And it released. It was very popular. It got featured by Apple on the store as one of the best examples of a widget. And then a few weeks after the introduction, I got contacted by Apple, and I was told I had to remove the widget because, I quote, widgets couldn't perform calculations.
That's so Apple.
And it was the kind of, one half of your company is featuring this as a great example, and then the other half is telling me that widgets are not allowed to do this, so can't do it. And I tweeted about that because there was a bit of back and forth, and then they basically said, look, final decision, this is what's going to happen. There is no higher power you can appeal to. Just accept it, remove it, move on. So I tweeted about that. Then I went out for dinner. And when I came back, it had been retweeted a lot and had ended up on like CNN and places like that. And I was like, oh no, because like Apple says, don't run to the press. It never works. I think that language is in the review guidelines. That's not true. You know, running to the press does actually work sometimes. But I hadn't actually intended it like that. But, you know, people like Jason and whatever had picked this up and retweeted it. Christina Warren said stuff about it. And it got big coverage, and I got a phone call the next day from Apple saying, we have changed our mind. You can do, you can, you know, widgets can do anything they like. Please carry on. And it was an extremely surreal time, an extremely stressful time, because I'd spent a lot of work on this to get them to working. And it turned out to be an extremely lucrative time as well, because it raised the profile of Peacock enormously. And like that year, I bought a pretty nice Retina iMac, and I had a holiday in the sun. And that was how I relaxed from the stress of all that. And, you know, I think the thing was, like, engineering, the engineering side were absolutely happy with people doing this. They built these things to be flexible and, you know, whatever. The app store editorial people were happy with it because, look, hey, there's a thing. People like it. It's great. It's functional. Somebody somewhere, I don't know who, had a problem with this, and their mind was changed. I don't know, by the swell of public opinion or by somebody higher up the chain or whatever, but that change happened. And what that actually meant, it wasn't just me, because there were other people as well who were told, nah, your widget's doing too many things. We don't like this because we're Apple and we like things to be simple and straightforward.
Was there any technical reason? I mean, is it like killing battery or something? I mean, that you can think of?
The thing was, I would say for Peacock, no, because like the core of Peacock, like, was running on 68,000 Motorola chips. You know, it's not that heavy.
It's math, baby. It's math. It's not, you know.
No matter how tired the hamster was at the end of the day,
yeah,
I mean, CPU, like, could still generate math.
You know, adding numbers together, pretty like basic stuff for CPUs. There may have been, I think, like, I was pushing the bounds of how much memory the widget was using, but there was a fixed limit. It was like, it was very low. It was like 64 megabytes. You could use that. And then, you know, your widget got killed. And so there was a lot of optimization to fit it into that space, but it worked and it fitted fine. So
that's actually an amazing number to think. That you need 64 megabytes to implement a widget. It's kind of mind boggling. But
like, fast forward to this WWDC announcement, and we've had these non-interactive widgets for the last couple of years since 2020, which are completely different. They're written in Swift UI. And you can have buttons on them, but the button just triggers a URL, which can open your app and do a specific
thing. They were basically images on the screen. They were not.
Yeah. I mean, like, effectively, you can have some interactive, like, timers and things on them, I think. Anyway, point being that, like, you could do something like in Dice by Peacock. I've got widgets and it's got like an array of dice on it, and you press one of those and it'll launch the app and it'll tell the app to roll that dice. So it works as a kind of quick launcher. But what these now do is you can have a button that when you press it, it will execute a piece of code, and then you can transmit information back to the widget.
They're interactive. And you can do something with them, which is kind of what you did when you first did the widget, right? Way back when. Yeah.
So I was listening to, Upgrade with Jason and Mike Hurley, and they had just come out of like some briefings or whatever, and they said, James can't make a calculator with this. You know, it's not meant for that. It's you know, it can't be done, basically, I think.
Who they?
Well,
Apple they, or Mike and Jason they? Did they mention you by name and said, James, don't get excited?
I have no knowledge as to what transpired.
Okay.
And who they talked to.
But somebody said.
All I heard was, you're not allowed to do this. And so what I did was, before the end of that day, I had a working prototype of Peacock running as a widget.
You are a glutton for punishment.
Environment. Well, it was like...
it was a challenge. They threw down the gauntlet.
I mean, they didn't throw it down, but it was like the best way to get me to do something is to tell me that I am not allowed to do it.
Yes.
So I have a prototype that, you know, it's a really basic thing and it looks terrible, but it's got buttons on it. You can push the buttons and you get numbers, you know, so.
But are you afraid that if you did that, they would say, well, yes, technically you're able, but we're not going to let you? Would you have the same issue that you had last time?
This is indeed the billion-dollar question. You know, what is going to happen if I submit this? And I don't know the answer. And the thing is, there's nothing in the rules to say that you can't do it. So what they would have to do is they would have to say something like, well, we've now got a rule which says you cannot have more than four buttons or something like that. Or, you know, but they have to actually specify and they have to draw, like, you can't, it's very difficult when you're saying, like, these things can be interactive and they can run code, but they can't run too much or they can't be too. I mean, like, for example, if I made a Dice by Peekout widget, almost exactly the same look as the current one, and it's got a row of buttons for different dice, I could have a thing. You press a D20 and it gives you back a number between 1 and 20. Is that too much calculations? Is that, you know, am I crossing the line with that? But I'm not, or am I not crossing the line with that, but I am crossing it with a calculator. And somebody somewhere has to sit down and they have to formalize a rule, or they have to just, you know, kind of, what I hope is that they will say, hey, this is really cool. You've done it again. This is brilliant. You know,
we all
miss.
Young man, I like the cut of your jib. You're a rule breaker and a maverick. Or, I could use someone like you on our team.
Exactly. Like, you know, Tim Cook is going to sit down and he's going to say, you know, we didn't think this should be done, but I've seen it and I was wrong.
The Grinch's Grinchy heart went up four sizes that day.
Sorry. Tim Cook, not a Grinch. Please approve my apps.
He is anti-Grinch. He is on record anti-Grinch. He may look like Winnie the Pooh,
but he's anti-Grinch. Okay, fine.
Said Leo Laporte, not
yes, not, so not Leo anybody,
or who is never going to be invited to an event anyway. So who cares?
Yeah, but some of us, our entire income stream is based upon the generosity yes. of Apple. So yes. I say nothing negative about Apple.
They're wonderful
in such situations.
And
also, Apple is not one person. Apple is like 1,000 little divisions. Absolutely. Who all have different opinions.
You're hoping, Andy, that they don't say, James, you're spunky, and I hate spunk.
That would be spunk.
The other way to interpret.
You got moxie,
you
kid.
Got moxie. Hey, let me just completely parenthetically, sidebar, but do you use Apple's random number generator, or do you create your own, or how do you make sure that those dice numbers are really
random? I use Apple's. Apple has good.
They have a good pseudo random stuff. Is it pseudo? But it is pseudo.
It is pseudo, but it's good, and it's genuinely good enough for like rolling a D20 or something like that. Yeah. But I don't know what the number is at that point. What I do is when I roll the dice, I'm simulating the physics of it. So I have a 3D object with weight.
Oh, that's cool.
And I'm throwing it, but I throw it and put a different like spin and force.
Oh, that's really cool. You're not just saying, give me a number from 1 to 20. You actually you're simulating the roll of the dice.
So that's where I use the random number stuff to work out like just how much force or spin to put on the dice as you roll it. And then the physics engine takes over and it bounces around. And once it stops moving, you have a number. So it's not like I say,
yeah.
It's not like I say, just give me a number between 1 and 20. I think it's pretty random. You can set it to auto roll and then export statistics if you want to know like exactly that this is not weighted or anything like that. So yeah, I stake my role playing game play on it being correct.
You'll stack it against any dice tower ever made by on Thingiverse. Yes.
I am going to make, at some point, I am going to make a virtual dice tower just.
God bless you, sir. I'm not being sarcastic. I love your apps because they're like the food at a diner where it's like here is a cheese omelet, but it's going to be executed absolutely perfectly. This is it's at the pinnacle of what cooking can be, simply because it's a basic thing, but executed with no excuses, no mistakes, no factor of it has not been thought about. Even when you think it's done, they couldn't enhance it. You enhance your stuff more. So when I think that you're adding a dice tower, I'm not saying, oh gosh, it's like, haha, it's funny that no, this is exactly what this app is supposed to be.
It'll be the Socratic dice tower, right?
This is why I am happy to be one of the pips to your Gladys Knight any day of the week.
I've decided I'm Jimmy Page. If we're going to pivot into different bands, anyway, I mean, I will put entirely oven engineered cheese omelet on my.
The platonic ideal of dice towers. I think James is in the pantheon of Apple developers for that reason. And I think that's one of the things that makes it was first the Mac, but in general, Apple, I hope they give people credit because one of the things that makes Apple so appealing in all of its hardware is that there are a few handful of developers. We used to call them the delicious library guys, right? Who put that extra care into their apps. Who are really in they're not just cranking them out, which is something you see on the Windows side more. And I think that's what makes Apple unique. And so thank you, James, because Apple really, honestly, Apple should absolutely venerate you because that is the distinction, in my opinion, between Apple software and everybody else's software.
I will be happy just to be tolerated. And
tolerated, not venerated, huh? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I humbly accept your praise, but there are a lot of people out there, I think, doing really good stuff. And
oh yeah, it's not just you, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's not just like people with gray hair. I mean, I think there are a lot of younger developers who are doing really cool stuff.
No, and look at the Apple design winners to give you a good example of
exactly.
That.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm not bitter that I've never won one of those. No, I mean, I entered once back in like, I don't think I entered while I was an Apple employee because that would be wrong. But I think it was shortly afterwards or something. But anyway, Drag Thing, if anybody remembers
Drag Thing. Oh, I love Drag Thing.
Launcher.
Yeah.
That was entered for one once. And I basically got told, and I was asked to submit it. So I submitted it. And then they said, no. And I was like, well, why did you ask me?
Oh my God.
So I never did anything from there. And nowadays it's pretty much a kind of, you know, don't call us, we'll call you. We will find your apps. And I think it's right that they're celebrating the new stuff and not the stuff that's been around for 30 years. Because everybody knows, well, not everybody. I mean, a lot of people know pCalc and know these things. So there's no point,
Well, I give you the unofficial design award.
I will take the MacBreak Weekly Design Award.
You have actually been many times a pick on MacBreak, as you well know. So,
I even when I don't catch the show as often as I would like, whenever my like Google alerts or whatever fire to say that I've been mentioned
again, he has. All right. So
I'll just quickly say that Leo, you're absolutely right. Like the only thing that I really miss about not having an iPhone, but having Android is that I love my Android hardware. I love the things that I can do with the Android that I can't do with the iPhone, but the creativity and the artistry of the apps just isn't there. They're great. They're solid. They do what they have to do. I can't remember the last time that I downloaded an app to my Android phone that gave me the level of delight that most iPhone apps do. That's something that Apple really needs to be praised for. As much as we laugh about you know, the interactions between Apple and developers time and time again, they've created something that attracts the sort of people that, oh my God, this is a wonderful canvas. I can be as weird as I want. I can execute a program, an app to the extent of my individuality here. And Google just has never been able to do that.
We used to call it the delicious generation because of a delicious right. library. Those are very skeuomorphic, all of those. We've come a long way since then. But there is absolutely a care and attention to detail, and even more an attention to aesthetics on the Apple side that just is really lacking everywhere else. And that's one of the reasons we still love our Macs. And Apple really needs to understand that. You know, they put that into their hardware and their OSs.
I think that that's also why it's hard to get Apple users, whether it's an iPhone or a Mac or an iPad, to go to another platform.
Yeah.
Is because you open it up and you just feel like the fit and finish is gone. Like, yeah. you're just kind of like you went from, you know, something that everything's kind of nice and rounded and fitting and everything fits together. And then everything's kind of like, it's all still there. It's just not pretty anymore.
I mean, the thing that is like, you know, when Apple does something, yeah, let's say the new settings app or something, and everybody's tearing stuff apart or whatever, and like, oh, Apple's completely lost the ability to do design, blah blah blah. And then you actually compare all that stuff to any other platform, and it is still superior. You know, I think that's the thing that people forget is like, yes, we complain about this stuff, but we complain about this stuff because we love it and because. Right. It's you know, we feel, this could be slightly more Mac-like, or, you know, this, whatever it is. But yeah, I mean, I've been using a few other, you know, like, show me the television that the user interface is in any way good.
Yeah.
I've never seen one.
Horrible. Yeah.
And even like I just got one of the Kobo Libra 2 e-readers, and it's nice, but the interface isn't quite as good as it should be.
Yeah.
And it's the same on every piece of consumer electronics. It's just like, it's functional, but it's not consistent and it's not whatever. So yeah, no. I mean, I've still got, like, sat next to me, I have a copy of the Human Interface Guidelines from 91 or whatever it is.
I was just going to refer to that. Yeah, yeah.
And that book was like my Bible when I was developing software. It was like, read this, internalize it. I literally, at university, we had my favorite class of like the entire computing science course that I did was a human interface design class. And what they would do is they would take something like the open and save boxes on the Mac, and they would completely disassemble it and say, you know, this is why they made this choice. You know, this is how, and we would do things like we would do, you know, user testing. And it's like, let's find out what the best way to do something is to make it easy for users or whatever. And I think that kind of class is still ingrained in my brain as I want to do this right, and those guidelines and everything else. So I think that is, and even people who like are young, but they didn't encounter that stuff, or they've started on iOS or whatever, it's still, there is the quality there that inspires people to make more quality things so that they look good on the platform.
I was so nostalgic for it. I went out and found a copy on eBay, I think, of the original Inside Macintosh notebooks. And I don't know if it was Steve Jobs, or I doubt it was. I'm sure there were others, but for some reason, Apple really had this vision, this unified vision in 1984 and continued it. It's attenuated a little bit, and things like settings maybe are an example of where it's not quite hued too. That's very modal, but if you compare it with settings on Windows, the control panel on Windows, you'll appreciate it.
I was setting up Windows 11 in VMware last week to do something, and it's like, I hate this. I actively hate this.
Yeah, we're a little prejudiced. Yeah.
And I think that one of the things that did drive that is Steve Jobs very early on learned calligraphy.
Right.
or
yeah, he was an aesthete for sure.
And,
yes.
And really absolutely. Was into topography and everything else. And topography is kind of the, in many ways, the finest version of attention to detail, because you're talking about the space between things and how big the serifs are and what the, you know, X height is, and, you know, and all of those things make a difference. And I think when you're paying attention to things at that level, it's one of the things, like, for instance, when I use Keynote, you can tell there's a difference between Keynote and other.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
But how it handles the font, like it's just a different way of anti-aliasing, spacing, everything else is just a little bit better, and it gives it a higher, you know, gravity to it. And so that's the thing, when you pay attention to that level of detail. And again, yeah. I think that a lot of folks that use Apple products are either consciously or unconsciously are just used to that. That's how everything works. You know,
I got to take a break. I want to come back. I really do want to delve into a little bit iOS 17 and Mac OS Sonoma and iPad OS 17 and some of the features that you're looking forward to, James, and things that you've noticed. We've got to go deeper on that, but it's really great to have James Thompson here, legendary Apple designer and developer, creator of pCalc and pDice. He's the P-man, and we're glad to have
I think
you.
We need to change that.
Yeah, that's not probably what you want to have in your lower third. Also, Andy Yanako is here. He's the G-man, and Alex Lindsay, he is I don't know what man. But we have the entire Justice League united here on the show for you today. Our show brought to you by Melissa, the M-Man, a leading global data quality identity verification and address management solutions provider. They're the ones. They've been doing this since, believe it or not, longer than James has been doing pCalc, since 1985. Specializing in global intelligence solutions so that organizations can unlock accurate data for a more compelling customer view. And you know what? Every year they get the awards. G2 is once again named Melissa's Clean Suite and Data Quality Suite leaders by G2, the leading peer-to-peer software platform, in the 2023 Data Quality and Address Verification Spring Report. Also named a Momentum Leader and High Performer in the same reports. Across the small business, mid-market, and enterprise segments, Melissa has received many recognitions, including Good Partner, Easiest to Do Business With, Easiest Setup, Highest User Adoption, and Easiest Admin. If you're a Melissa customer, you know Melissa definitely deserves that. If you're not, you should know what Melissa can do. It's pretty impressive. Melissa is also very affordable, I should mention. They ranked highly in the price category for Clean Suite and Data Quality Suite across many segments. That's because Melissa firmly believes you should make money on data quality. It shouldn't cost you more than it saves. So they continue to offer the best affordable solutions for data quality and address verification. I think everybody kind of intuitively understands that bad data in your contact list can cost you money. But did you know poor data quality can cost organizations an average of $15 million a year? And that number goes up every year. Bad data stays in your system. Melissa will help you eliminate waste and lost opportunities from incorrect mailings. It'll improve your customer satisfaction with seamless real-time identity verification tools. If you have to comply with various federal and international guidelines, you know that sometimes customer verification is a problem, is a friction point for your customers. Not with Melissa. Their real-time identity verification tools are fast and effective. They have matching and deduplication tools, which will help you eliminate dupes. I tell this story all the time. A restoration hardware used to send me 5 of their catalog, same name and address, same catalog, every 6 months. And it was bizarre because I know those catalogs, beautiful, 4-color, thick catalog, must have cost them a ton. What a waste. Plus, it kind of irritates the customers, right? You want a single high-quality customer record that links all the customer touch points, so without duplication, right? So you know everything you need to know about your customer to serve them without annoying them. You'll be glad to know Melissa complies with the U.S. Postal Service's move update requirements, which means you're getting the most current address data because they process through the USPS's National Change of Address Database. But that's just one of many ways Melissa makes sure your data is accurate. since 1985. And don't worry, your data is safe with Melissa. They continually undergo independent security audits to reinforce their commitment to data security, privacy, and, of course, compliance. They're SOC 2 compliant, HIPAA compliant, GDPR compliant. You can use Melissa with confidence. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free. Melissa.com/twit. Check out the API. There's a SaaS version. There's an on-prem version. You get to use Melissa the way that works for you securely, quickly, easily. You can even incorporate it into your own software using the Melissa APIs. Melissa.com/twit. We thank them so much for support Mac Break Weekly. You support us when you use that address, though. Make sure you use that address so they know you saw it here. Melissa.com/twit. I love it that you have the 87 Apple human interface guidelines on your desk right there.
I think it's like 91, 92 or something.
Yeah.
I've got a stack of all the original books that I got.
I love those. Yeah.
Because I just couldn't throw them away.
Did you start with Pascal? Or
yep,
you did.
Yeah, it was Pascal. That was what our university taught as the language, and we used Think Pascal.
Great Pascal. It was very fast. And I love the Macintosh Programmers Workshop, though. That was an amazing tool, an IDE that I don't think has ever been surpassed. And I used that for 68,000 assembler. That was really awesome.
I used that for ported a programming language compiler to that as an MPW tool, and yes, that was something. But I think Pascal was a nice simple thing. The debugger in Think Pascal was one of the best, and I believe one of the people who worked on Think Pascal was Rich Siegel.
Yes.
Of BB Edit fame.
I didn't know that.
So
yeah. Well, they were in Boston. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I got started. And we were doing our coursework at university in Think Pascal. And I realized that the copy of Think Pascal that they gave us had all the Mac toolbox stuff with it.
Wow.
And I was like, hey, I could actually write an app with this. So I went out and I bought Inside Mac, like 1, 2, I think I got like 1, 2, 3, and 6, and I missed, or 7, and I missed like some critical things. So the first version of Peacock, if you ran it on a color machine, bad things happened. But yeah, it was like I bought all those books at vast expense.
Yeah.
And just sat for the summer.
A huge use of shelf space too.
Yeah. Well, they're still there.
Apple's 7-foot shelf right there.
but yeah, it was, you know, I don't want to say it's the best Apple documentation has ever been, because that is mean to the people who are currently doing documentation.
It's pretty darn
but
good.
But it was,
yeah,
it was really consistent and solid.
Bruce Tacazzini and Scott Canaster and that group, they were so good.
And not just that, as objects, as bound paperback books, they're just so handsome to,
yeah,
they're definitely designed to be pulled off the shelf and splayed in stacks in layers on top of your desk as you work your way through a problem. But man, there's just something about the binding of those books that even when they were really, really out of date, it's like, I can't get rid of these. It's like a leather bound book of poetry.
It's a first edition.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah. It's like a beautiful edition of James Joyce Ulysses. I know I will never open this, but I just enjoy holding it.
Yeah. Exactly.
You use Swift now entirely in Xcode?
Nope. So I'm using pCalc pCalc was written in Pascal, hand converted to C, a C++ wrapper around that, then an Objective-C wrapper around that, then a Swift wrapper around that. So the analogy that I always use with pCalc is, if you remember Star Trek, the motion picture, where they discover that the enormous entity that is threatening them, like right at the center of it, is the original Voyager probe. And then there's all this just layers around it. That is what pCalc is. A lot of my code is Objective-C at this point. And, you know, because pCalc has been around long enough, some of it's rewritten, some of it new stuff like widgets is all Swift and Swift UI, whatever. But there's no real point in rewriting existing working code as you write new stuff, yes. When I did Dice was like, it was a spin-off of the About screen from pCalc, and I was challenged by Jason Snell to make a dice rolling app. And I decided I would make one and ship one in, I think I gave myself a week, and it took me 2 weeks from new project to being on the App Store was like 2 weeks.
Wow.
But because I was reusing a lot of pCalc code in that is also Objective-C and remains Objective-C. So I'm a contradiction in that I simultaneously like to adopt new exciting things as quickly as possible, but I'm also extremely conservative in some of the technology choices I make because now this stuff works.
If it works, don't change it. Yeah.
But,
I mean, but, you must have to write a lot of glue code to keep it all working together.
No, I mean, it's not actually too bad. You can call Swift and Objective-C. You can interoperate between them very easily. Yeah. And you can have one bit of your app being Swift UI and one bit just regular UI kit. It's actually pretty good for that sort of stuff.
So I want to kind of stick with 3D because you really did do a early 3D app, you know? So you were right on that bandwagon from day one. Are the interfaces for Vision OS similar, different, better, worse?
I mean, it's pretty similar. I mean, everything, what they're trying to encourage developers to use is Swift UI, which they've extended out for 3D stuff. But you can, you know, you can still port over your UIKit app, as far as I can tell. You know, there's also RealityKit is what they have been using for AR stuff previously, which exists and has been extended in.
So none of that breaks. All of that stuff is continuing with additions.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be things that I need to do. Like with Dice, I'll need to enhance things because, like, as I said before, the SceneKit, which is the main thing Dice uses, isn't a thing that you can really use for 3D. But I have this RealityKit test mode, which I use for doing the AR stuff. And, you know, I know that I can build that out fairly easily and have something that will work in 3D. I mean, I haven't like dug deep into things like the hand gesture stuff and like how, you know, will I be able to like pick up a dice with my hand?
That would be cool.
Roll it. And I think that might be possible.
You have to look at the die and then go with your fingers. Can you create new gestures or do you have to use their existing?
I think you can use stuff and you can use direct interaction with objects.
Interesting.
So, I mean, I don't think it's going to be a case that you have to do it like the sort of the pinching your fingers together,
right,
and looking at stuff. I think there could be some hands-on stuff.
Those are the questions I'm going to find really, really interesting, where I think that sometimes you get sort of like you get into a problem where it's like interface skeuomorphism, where, hey, if I want to roll the dice on this actual real world table in front of me, the obvious way to do it is that I'm going to let the user reach out with their hand and pick up the dice and roll them, when that could be cool and fun. But when you get to the part where people like this app and they actually want to use it, maybe they would just rather have like a hovering widget that they can just tap on, and then like a dice cup simply raises up on its own as if magically shakes it and then dumps itself out.
I mean, I think that is the case. And I think like if you were actually with your Vision Pro on playing Dungeons and Dragons over FaceTime, let us say, you might just want to have a little window off at the side with, you know, your Dice by pCalc in it, and you tap a button or gesture at it and roll the dice. You probably don't want to be sitting like in a cave surrounded by dragons. You know, while that would be cool, I don't know that that is like the, you know, I don't think people specifically roll dice or do maths as a singular task. You know,
it doesn't need to be immersive. I don't need to believe that the dice are there.
But on the other hand, wouldn't it be cool as a mode that you could do?
Like a demon just simply spawns from like a fiery pit on the middle of the table, crushes orcs into the shapes of cubes, throws them away as they scream, and then, oh, look, eight. Roll for action.
I mean, it's like, what I like is taking like the most sophisticated, as I say, consumer product ever with all these super high-end processors and all this stuff, and basically generating a number between 1 and 20.
Who's going to set your sights even lower? Who's going to have the first flashlight app for vision?
What happens when the die rolls off the table?
Well, you know, I've got that currently. In the current version, you can roll dice on your table and they will fall off onto the floor.
And do they keep rolling when they hit the floor?
They do, because when you're even on the iPhone, when it's got the depth indicator stuff, LiDAR. Yes, with the LiDAR, it's scanning the room and it's building a 3D model of the surfaces that it sees. So long as it's seen it, if you roll the dice, it will fall off your table naturally and will roll under a chair. And there is, like, even just doing that through a phone or iPad screen, which is not the way to do AR, there is something magical about having a dice roll under a table, because
it should. That's what dice does.
Yeah. And then just like every other like family board game or family game system, like after you've had this app for like 6 months, like nominally, like one of the dice is rolling like under the sofa, but no one saw it. So they have to get like another die from another game that doesn't quite match the other set.
Maybe I sell them another dice for like 99 cents to replace the one that lost under the sofa. I mean,
so many opportunities.
You got to pay for that. You got to pay for that vision somehow. Oh gosh,
I need to sell 3,500 dice immediately.
I do think tabletop games might end up being a big category for the Vision Pro.
I can see the stuff with, you know, like the virtual tabletop in front of you, where you've got, you know, your little figures or whatever. It makes sense, and if you can do it. But the thought of like trying to get together, you know, half a dozen people, all who have £3,500 headsets to play D&D in the same room as you or whatever.
I think there's a lot of people that will buy the headset that might have played D&D in the past.
I think there might be a Venn diagram with a very large wedge in the middle. I think of Steve Wozniak, who had a league of Segway polo players. And the Segway was twice as much at the time. I think it'll be a thin layer of people, but there will be some who would like to play tabletop games. It probably isn't a moneymaker.
If you can find a way to sell people like unpainted minifigs and then sell them the virtual paint for that, I know a lot of people that have a second house right now, if not for all the lead they've got in closets.
Genuinely, I have seen a game which does exactly that, that you are buying like figures and painting them and playing the game in virtually.
In the long run, that's going to be the bane of 3D environments, just as it was the bane of Second Life, which is when it suddenly becomes an economy and you've got, you know, bucks and you're spending Zuck bucks for designs.
I trust Apple to more extent than I trust, you know, like Meta or somebody else to do this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it is going to be, you know, you are going to get the equivalent of the, you know, free in quotes games that you download that you have to buy your gems or your diamonds or your whatever. And that's, you know, because
that's where the money is.
Well, it's also that the whole app store economy is just a weird thing, you know, and like actually making money is difficult. I wouldn't say it's easy, but it's easier if you've been around for 30 years and people know your name and your products, but coming to stuff you know, if you've got an app that you're launching and you're trying to get it in front of people, that's a really hard thing to do and then make money out of it.
I do have my miniature Leo Laporte for Hero Forge all ready for our game. So when this comes pre-painted, I got to tell you, but if you wanted to change the colors, you could do that. I don't know.
I like the fact that it comes with an iPhone.
A microphone well. And an older iPhone, because I think this is an old. Did you do this, Patrick? Who did this? This is very nice. Got the Fez. I'm sitting on an exercise ball. Patrick did it. Very nice. let's see. How about Sonoma? Anything? You know, I wasn't completely clear. Are the widgets on Sonoma the same as the widgets on iPad as an iOS? Yeah. Those are all the same.
Yeah, and like even today with the Dice's widgets, because it's a Catalyst app, but it's literally it's the same code running. So yeah, it's Swift UI everywhere. It's all very similar.
Good.
Yeah, you can put the widgets on the desktop. And
I know. I really like
move
that.
Around the icons. Yeah,
I really like that. That's something other operating systems have had for some time. I've used Konki on Linux. Windows flirted with it. And then decided this is too much of a hazard. I could see them bringing it back now that Apple's doing it. So I look forward to that. I think it's going to be a nice feature.
Yeah. I mean, there was a few little things that I really liked, like the being able to turn web pages into standalone web apps.
How close is that to the full PWA, or is that just Apple's version of?
No, this is just basically, it's just wrapping a Safari window into an app that, you know, you can layer amongst other apps, and it's got an app in the dock and things like that. It seems like the ideal kind of thing that you can like constrain Facebook or something like that into. So it's kept securely away from everything else. And I think that, like, I was looking at the list of things. You know, there's nothing that's like amazing. I mean, like the game mode stuff and the more interesting commitment to doing game stuff. I find that interesting.
I think we've been talking about it. We're very pleased to see Apple wrote a fairly long 20,000, according to Christina Warren, who wrote an article about it, 20,000 line addition to the crossover Wine library for Mac that allows you to run DirectX 12 games at a fairly good pace on the new Apple Silicon laptops.
Yeah, I would say the caveat with that is I don't think Apple intends anyone to ship games like this. You know,
no, it's to test your game to see if you could port it to Metal. But you got to think there are going to be people who are going to say, fine, I'll just take it the way it is. Thank you very much.
I don't think it's for that. And I don't even know if Apple would let you do that. But I think it, like any, I know people who work for Mac game porting things, and a lot of them have internal libraries to do this kind of thing already to convert the DirectX calls. And I'm not 100% sure, and I would need to look this up, whether Apple contributed the changes that they made to this back to the open source project, or whether they, you know, like, are keeping them to themselves. I certainly heard some people complaining that they weren't sharing what they had done. So I can't speak with authority to whether they did or not, but it's interesting. But I think it is more a case of like, here's your game running. Like, imagine how much better it would be if you actually spent some time and you converted this to Metal.
Right.
But, you know, just the fact that people have run, you know, fairly modern games.
Here's Diablo 4 running on a MacBook at a pretty decent frame rate. I think this is around 60 frames a second right now. You can see the frame rate up in the upper right-hand corner using this crossover or Wine library. That's pretty playable. This is ultra level too, ultra graphics.
It's good stuff, and it's interesting. It does show what the performance is. And I like the fact that Apple is kind of leaning into games a bit more, because certainly they've had a reputation for, like, let's say the last 30 years of not being great with games. But, you know, even the stuff that they showed, you know, like they had Death Stranding, which is a, you know, right, I don't know, 2-3 year old yeah, game.
Kojima.
No Man's Sky. And I love No Man's Sky. It's a great game, but it's been out for years.
Right.
You know, this is.
No one buys a Mac to play AAA games. You'd be silly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not.
I think, like, honestly, I've been running a Mac and a separate games console to play games on for, yes, literally 30 years.
Yeah, get an Xbox or a PlayStation if you really want to do
that. Yeah. I mean, it's like, Microsoft used to be the enemy, I have to say, but the Xbox and Game Pass is pretty sweet.
It's a good deal. What game do you play these days?
What game am I playing these days? I have put 150 hours into the new Zelda game, and I'm probably about halfway through it.
Tears of the Kingdom, baby. We now know who's shedding those tears. All the lonesome spouses.
because my spouse
is playing
about
with
90
you?
Hours
nice.
Into it. No, she's like, we've got one Switch and, you know, one TV.
Dear.
So we have to, like, share.
Oh.
It's not fighting. It's like, now it's your turn. Now it's
your turn, dear.
But it's, you know, I think everyone plays games now. It's not just men. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Everybody plays games. You bet. Of some sort.
I would say Tears of the Kingdom is probably up there for one of the best games ever made.
Right.
It is so good. That is what is taking a lot of my time. I hope to try and finish it before WWDC, and I failed.
Well, you're just a punter. You haven't put anywhere near the number of hours in that it's going to take. Yeah. Here, by the way, full credit to Andy Anako, because he used Hero Forge, which was one of your picks of the week, to do a 3D Jim Dalrymple.
Wow.
Beer bottles and guitar included.
I'm not sure there's enough beer bottles there in that one. But.
Well, it was early. It was early in the day, but the beard is definitely on point. Very much fear the beard. Yeah, I forgot
it's
about that.
Scary.
Andy.
How many accessories you can add? You gotta imagine that every time someone emails or has feedback saying, "Hey, I really really wanted to have like a Devo hat on my character." We added a Devo hat.
It's just a planner.
I do find that Hero Forge, like, even if I haven't actually had anything made yet, it is really entertaining just to sit there and make these things.
Oh, well, we have a fellow Hero Forger.
Wouldn't it be great if that would be a wonderful VR app? Like, if just the idea of, I just want to create figures and I don't want to know how to sculpt. I don't necessarily want to know how to paint. Just show me, like, sample poses that I can start with, accessories and paints that colors I can add to it, and just have this object on a shelf in VR that I can just admire and just keep adding like a collection of thimbles or spoons. That would be super fun.
I think technically, you know, like, they could have a website with 3D content in it. And, you know, you could just go to their website and click.
Microsoft did that when, for briefly, Microsoft got into this. Yeah. I wonder if you can export these Hero Forges as USDZ in USDZ format or no, probably not. Huh?
They probably don't want to give you that because they don't want you just taking them away and printing them yourself.
Right.
I could see, exactly that kind of stuff working really well in 3D, sitting with a giant figurine of Jim Dalrymple in front of you.
Glaring at you. Well, come on. We got a post.
Since we talked last, didn't Alex, you would know, who released an iOS app? Was it that lets you do, because Anthony came in and scanned
for game characters or?
Oh, no.
For iOS. No, there's Polycam.
No, there's
the one
a new one that just came out. Like Human Cam or Humanity. Oh, I can't remember what it was.
Well, there's, you know, and the one that's starting to come up now is MetaHuman.
That was it.
Yeah.
Who's that from?
That's from Epic.
So that's in the Unreal Engine, which means it's not going to be helpful.
It's, It's in Unreal. I mean, it's the same company, but MetaHuman kind of lives in its own world. I'm sure it's using part of the engine, but MetaHuman is pretty impressive on a whole bunch of layers. For a long time, we could only make things that looked like kind of like somebody because you'd pull dials. Now we can do photogrammetry and actually get a head and replace the head in MetaHuman and have it all map. And the big thing there is that you can, you know, animate it with your phone and stuff like that. So it's slick. I mean, Epic's doing a lot of great stuff. They are going to be most likely on the outside looking in. I don't think that Apple and Epic are talking.
I mean,
are talking terms. And so that puts them at a huge disadvantage to Unity because Unity, I think, is, I mean, obviously they were in WWC. So there's a lot of Apple's embracing a lot of what Unity's doing. And I don't think that Epic and Apple are in on speaking terms. So.
But you can still build the latest, you know, Unreal 5. Whatever on the Mac. You know, it works.
You can, but if you don't have access, if you don't have Unity's access.
It's like, it seems like that is just going to be a political thing. But I think the people doing the technology, you know, as we say, like this thing for MetaHuman for doing the facial animation and stuff running on an iPhone. So it's not like Epic is saying we shall never touch another.
No. I don't think Epic wants to do that. And I definitely don't think the Unreal folks want to do it. I think that they're just not going to get a lot of Apple's attention. You know, it's not that Apple's doing anything to them. I just think that Apple's probably not going to step out of its way to help Epic at this point until they drop their lawsuits. So I think that's going to probably be probably how that's going to work. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, Unity fills a big gap, and it's what Epic was filling until Epic did the lawsuit. Unity is filling a big gap for Apple because they can't build all those tools immediately.
So to fill in the gaps here, apparently you can export into STL for $5 from Hero Forge, and you can download into Unity 3D format. So that's interesting. So Hero Forge could be used to design.
So what I'm hearing is we're going to make a game with Jim Dalrymple.
I think we are going to have a Jim Dalrymple tabletop
Beard
game.
Hero.
I'd like him in a chess set, actually. That'd be a lot of fun.
Beards and bottles. Or
yeah, the pawns are beer bottles. And Jim's the king, obviously. Maybe we'll make, I don't know, who should be the queen. But that would be kind of fun. Anthony tells me he was using Reality Scan to capture me. And then he's going to rebuild it within MetaHuman to create a MetaHuman Leo. So you can now, I guess, do photogrammetry. With real people.
And Reality Scan is also owned by Epic, I believe.
Epic, okay. Yeah.
Alex, what do you think of the idea of Apple buying Unreal? It's
too expensive.
It's because
it's not buying Unreal, it's buying Epic. Oh, and right, Epic, you
Epic's
know,
worth
Epic
a lot
entire,
of money right
you know,
now. This thing called Fortnite, you ever hear of it?
I mean, the problem with both Unity and Epic, they weren't worth a lot, five or 8 years ago, but now they're both in the plus $15 billion valuation range. It's not that Apple can't afford it. It would just be a huge, I think it would be hard for them to, I think, incorporate those two things together. Yes.
Tim Sweeney made in the first year of Fortnite himself earned $7 billion. So it's going to be costly, I think.
Yeah. And the thing is that the, Unreal Engine is obviously very connected to what, Epic wants to do, which is the whole lawsuit is over, they want to build marketplaces. They want people to do exactly what we were talking about earlier, which is sell items to each other, in a metaverse and, sell houses and cars and all kinds of other things, but they don't want to give Apple 30% of every sale. So that's that their entire business model is wrapped up.
Apple could afford it. They've got the cash, in the lying around.
Oh, no, they could. Is
it for sale, right?
Tim Sweeney probably would not sell on point of principle.
Well, exactly. This is the company that fought each other viciously in court. It still is, as far as I know. The battle continues. Epic Games net worth $32 billion, according to the last valuation in April of last year. Apple could afford $32 billion. Come on, Apple. But yeah, you'd have to do a hostile takeover, right? Are they? I don't even know if they're public, to be honest. Anyway, that's a silly, wasteful time. We've got Paul McCartney here. Let's ask some
important questions. You guys, anything? Alex, are you actively looking at developing for the Vision Pro?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm already in pre-production. Yeah. So we're looking at, I'm mostly looking at the video end of things. So, you know, how to deliver right now, it looks like we're still going to be kind of clamped. When we say that Apple didn't cut any corner, I mean, wasn't constrained by price. I think they were constrained by either weight or heat or something, because most of us think that eventually want to get to 120 frames per second, 6 or 8K per eye.
They're at 90 now.
This first headset. And 90 is kind of a weird, from a video perspective, it's a weird frame rate, because now it does 96 for 24 frames. So if you're playing a movie, it'll do 96 so that it can give you whole frames.
Right.
You know, it doesn't cut those frames off. So it's 4X the 24. So that's there. But otherwise, everything's 90 frame. 90 frame makes a big difference for 3D when it's animating in front of you, but we can't produce video at 90 frames a second. So we could produce it at 120.
What's the screen?
Is
it 4K screen?
They've been a little squirrely about the exact resolution, but it does appear to be 4 UHD or some version of 4K or close to it. So yeah, so it's going.
And you can watch movies in it, so it has to be some reasonable way to confirm.
Not only can you watch movies, you can watch them in 3D, and it's going to be a great platform for 3D.
Because they demoed Avatar, the way of the Wawa.
And Avatar is a good example. Avatar is a 48 frame per second film. You know, so they talk about being 48 underwater and 24. It's 48, and then they just double the frames when they're above the water, and then they go back to single frames in the 48. But it's a 48 frame, which is, you can't play that back in a lot of places. I mean, you know, your average TVs don't know what to do with that and so on. So the headset's actually going to be really great for watching things like Avatar. And I think that it's going to bring back, there's a whole bunch of us now that are suddenly trying to find all those 3D rigs. You know, I was just talking to someone who has a whole bunch of rigs, and he's like, yeah, I can't sell these ones anymore because they're under demand and I got to use them for production. And I can sell these ones.
You must have some of those shelves behind you there.
I don't have, I have one. Yeah, this one right here.
That is Osmo,
that's
right?
A 360. That's a Ozo.
Ozo.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, so yeah. But it's not going to be the quality that we would want to, you know, shoot for these now. So a lot of us are looking at things like the R5C, which is the Canon. Canon's R5C they have a stereo lens on
it.
So you can do a 180. But that would be feeding the spaces. So you'd feed that into a space environment rather than the volume or window environment. But really, when you're watching movies, you probably watch it in the window environment. And the advantage of that is that you can shoot rectilinear video. So we can, if we fill the video frame, we can go ahead and shoot quote unquote traditional 3D, not 180. But the problem there is that when you start doing that, we have all kinds of problems like convergence and where those cameras are. And those become these really complicated, you know, rigs. And so that's what we're all trying to find, who has rigs that are still sitting. There's two of them in our building. So we're trying to get them to rebuild them again.
That used to be the next big thing. And then it wasn't.
Yeah. So there's all these rigs. Millions and millions of dollars were spent on these rigs. I mean, these rigs, like, you can get a rig now that's like, that was $60,000 or $70,000. You can buy them now for about 10. And there's a bunch of people that are in discussions about buying those at 10.
Wow.
If you email me afterwards and say, who's selling these for 10? I can't tell you because I'm trying to buy. But those are, you know, it's suddenly everybody's interested in 3D again, because these will be incredible headsets for it. And the big thing is that when someone spends $3,500 on a headset, they're likely to buy a lot of things that get made for it. So if you're, you know, there's this kind of in the first couple months that these headsets go out, and really the first year, there's going to be a lot of demand for the next new thing. You can definitely move all your apps to it, but something that fully takes advantage of the headset should be pretty interesting.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, one of the questions that I had about the headset, which I haven't really seen answered, is, so you can record, like, when you've got the thing on, you can record what you're seeing.
Yeah.
And then later playback that stuff in a window, it seems.
Or send it to somebody else to watch it as well.
But yeah, they have to have a Vision Pro to get the full stereoscopic version.
Yes, but it's more the kind of like they seem to be moving. They seem to be positioning it as you're watching. You watch this memory back in a window,
yeah,
rather than experiencing it full.
Oh, that's interesting.
As you,
yeah, I don't,
as you,
I don't, yeah, because that's a, it's a, from a resolution perspective, it's much more complicated. And so I think that those cameras may not be able to, I mean, you, the cameras that need to do that may not be able to do the 180 at a resolution that would be, that would be high enough quality that would make it worth it. So I think that that's probably why they're not a small fisheye spreading all of that 180 degrees out over 4K. Let's say if it's capturing 4K. Wouldn't necessarily, it would probably look a little soft. So yeah. by pulling it in, they can get a higher quality for that window. And I'm going to guess that that's what they're going to do. And it's funny, you know, a lot of people talk about that, but people aren't going to put the headsets on. But I mean, when I grew up, people were putting big cameras, they had big camcorders and everything else. This is just the next camcorder. But the other thing is I
imagine version two will have better recording. I mean, that would really be an important feature that would sell a lot of headsets too, if you could only watch it.
It was hands-on one of my favorite features of Google Glass, just being able to just 100%. Nominally.
Yeah.
If something cool is happening, just tap the side of the frames, and now suddenly I'm watching it, but also recording it.
Take a video. And I have shots of video of me like swinging my daughter in a circle around in a park, you know, with, you know, and when she's really small, which is much more valuable now, but it was from that point of view. Yeah. Now it was less, it would be less weird with the Google Glass of all things than it would be with my goggles. Yeah. I'm just going to be blown away that by this iPhone 16, we don't have a camera set up in the iPhones that will shoot stereo for the headsets. Mm-hmm. I think there's a 50 to 60% chance we'll see it in this camera that comes into the next one, given that they knew that this headset was coming. And I think it's probably 80% by the next year that we'll see the ability to do stereo acquisition in the camera, in the iPhones. Because it wouldn't take very much to do it.
I could see them do an extra high-end phone, you know,
It would be the Pro. I think it would just be the Pro.
Think probably one above the Pro. I think they would probably put that on something.
I mean, literally, it would be adding one more lens. Like, it'd be a quad instead of a thing. And you could, that's all you, because you would have two lenses that are matching. You don't have to spread it out, because if you look at the hydrogen that Red made, those sensors were right next to each other, which is not interocular distance, but still got enough data with computational photography to, it looked pretty good. I mean, the Red stuff looked pretty stereo, even with sensors that were a centimeter apart. So the ones that on the phone would be two or three times as far apart as the Red camera. So you could definitely generate 3D data relatively, especially with help from the LiDAR and everything else. You'd probably be able to create some pretty great 3D data, and you could do it potentially with just computational photography right now with the current lenses that are there. I would worry that it just wouldn't look right. You know, like, you'd want two lenses that are identical, but you know, Apple's got lots of engineers thinking about that, I'm sure. Yeah.
To me, it depends on how much more expensive would that second lens be, or that additional lens be, and is there enough elasticity in what people are willing to spend for the Pro model to say, hey, I don't own these goggles, I don't care about these goggles, I don't want these goggles. What I would much rather be able to do is afford another 256 gigabytes of storage, but no, I'm being forced to pay for this extra lens that I don't know if I'm going to actually use or not. So I don't.
But that's
my sticking point.
Then you can have, you know, you've got this 3D movie of your daughter's fifth birthday party.
I don't know people that are buying the Pro version. Most of the people that I know that are buying the Pro version are not super connected to the price. You know, like they and I don't think that they're, I don't think that's why you buy the Pro version. And so I think that they'd probably sell just as, I don't think they'd sell any less. Even if it was $200 more, I don't think it would matter.
Okay.
As someone who buys the Pro version, you know, if it was $200 more, I'd be like, oh, there'd be something else I can't buy. It wouldn't be less memory or less of the camera. It'd be something else in my life that I don't buy because I want a little more camera.
Your child doesn't get the birthday present, but you get the video.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah. You're not going to get a cell phone.
Daddy spent all the money on this, honey. Enjoy.
Oh, that is a wonderfully weird family dynamic. Say, kid, here's the deal. Here's the choice I'm offering. You, I can either give you a Nintendo Switch for your new Nintendo Switch for your birthday, or I can buy a $400 better than phone, which will make me want to spend more time with you because I'll be wanting to take more video of you.
That's so right. My kids hated it when I took pictures and video of them. And all I have now is a bunch of pictures with their hands in front of their face like paparazzi.
You know, it's so funny. We hated it when my dad took it, but we prized.
Oh, you're glad to have them now. You know? Absolutely. In fact, I just sent Abby a bunch of pictures she said, do you have any pictures of us when we were kids? I said, Abby, I do, but your hands in front of your face for 90% of them.
I mean, there's so few pictures of me as like a teenager because I was like completely averse to anything. And I want those pictures.
Sure.
So. Yeah. I was thinking about that the other day that like when my parents died, that was the first time that all of their friends like dug up these super rare pictures. Oh, here is my mom as a teenager just hanging out. Here is my dad going skiing, which I never even he didn't have a copy of it and I didn't ask about it. It's such an amazing thing when you see your parents in their 20s and in their teens just hanging out. It's going to be amazing like 20 years from now when the TikTok kids and the Instagram kids and the VSCO kids, all of their children are going to be able to see to their embarrassment. Like here is my parents like me going out there having fun, occasionally doing things that are stupid, but hey, look, they raised two kids and they're happy with their lives. Even though they're 30 years later, that's going to be an interesting pivot point for society, I think.
Couple other stories before we get our picks of the week and wrap this thing up. Apple is facing some headwinds. Japan is now pushing for both Apple and Google to add sideloading in the Japanese versions of the app stores. This is a new Japanese law. Apple's going to have to do it this summer, probably in the EU or next summer in the EU as well. So, it's going to be kind of this patchwork quilt of app stores in different countries, probably not here, although who knows what the FTC will do. The EU says all smartphones must have user replaceable batteries by 2027.
Yeah, but they're not necessarily talking about like having the back removable in a cartridge. Oh,
those were the good old days, man.
I loved it
when I could buy three batteries for my Samsung S3. And
now we have batteries that because of greater battery management and chemistry they last a couple of days. So now it's not quite, you don't have to worry about getting it through a day. There's been a lot of pearl clutching about this one. The proposal again doesn't say that you can't have waterproof phones anymore. You have to, have externally pop off. They're basically saying that do not be jerks and do anything to the design that would make it, that would prohibit someone from opening the back and removing a battery and putting a new battery in. So it seems, and also it's notable that they're not making this happen until 2027, which is like 4 years from now, which is almost exactly the cycle of design for a brand new model of phone.
It's likely that Apple will just make it that you can, take it to the Apple store and open it up. I mean, you could do that now, right?
It's gonna be a third party. I think that the days where you're gonna have to rent a special tool from Apple to replace a battery, that's the sort of stuff that they want to get rid of.
Right. Speaking of,
I think an iFixit kit, I think we'll do it.
Yeah, I think it's a recommendation too. I don't think it's finalized yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, probably a little bit of headwinds on what, exactly what year that might occur and whether phones will even be a thing by the time.
Who knows? You'll have to be able to open your Vision Pro.
There's a battery outside, so you can easily replace the Vision Pro for battery because it's not even in the thing. Yeah, we have to remember that USB-C took 12 years.
Yeah. I think was that's the problem with it is by the time it happens, who knows what the standards will be.
I think we're still going to need batteries in the future.
So I guess those aren't going away. Okay. Apple has expanded its self-service repair program to include the iPhone 14 lineup and M2-based MacBooks. That'll start June 21st. And maybe even more importantly, they're changing that final system configuration validation step, which used to involve calling Apple on the phone. You'll be able to do that system configuration, that validation step, by placing your device into diagnostics mode and following on-screen prompts.
Yeah. So. Isn't that good to see that this wasn't just phony baloney? We want to get around. Yeah. We want to get around complaints. It really does seem like they're committed to this. And now I am willing to believe that this is part of what goes into design, that they make sure that that whatever they design in the future will be able to conform to this program.
You'll still have to order the kit, a rental kit of very, very elaborate tools. I wonder if this would satisfy the EU. You know, well, yeah, you can put a new battery in if you have our super duper scooper. All right.
First, is your home or apartment rated for 250 volts, yeah. 40 amps?
Yeah, exactly.
Because
exactly. Let us take a little break. I think we could do some picks of the week coming up in just a bit. James Thompson, our very special guest from PCALC, Andy Anacco, Alex Lindsay, and our show today brought to you by ZocDoc. See, now we don't have the National Health Service here in the United States. We actually have to find our physicians on our own. ZocDoc, though, really solves this problem. And what I love most about ZocDoc is it's a free app, iPhone, Android. You can go onto the website and get the link by going to ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. But you can actually narrow down the search by insurance, so you can make sure you're going to a doctor that takes your insurance, by whether they're available, you know, whether they have room. A lot of times these days in the U.S., you get a doctor and they say, well, I'm not taking on new patients. Well, that's no good. Well, ZocDoc will find the doctor that is. And it's not just doctors. It's physicians, dentists, chiropractors, and every specialty. I mentioned this before. I was looking for a gerontologist for my older parent. And I was able to narrow one down in the area who takes her insurance, who's available. This is fantastic. Oh, I left out the most important part. User reviews, verified reviews of the doctor. So you're going to find a doctor that fits your needs. This is important. Everybody has kind of different requirements for a doctor. Some people want a doctor to explain it all in great detail. Some people want a doctor just to say, just tell me, doc, what should I do? Give me the one answer. You get to get the doctor that fits your style because you can read these reviews. ZocDoc is the only free app that lets you find and book doctors who are patient reviewed, take your insurance, and are available when you need them, and treat almost every condition under the sun. Book an appointment with a few taps in ZocDoc's app. You'll feel better faster with ZocDoc. Some of these docs available within 24 hours. Forget Dr. Roulette or looking around on the internet. You know, you don't want a doctor's choose a doctor based on Yelp reviews. Please, trust me. ZocDoc's the way to go. ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. Download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. Many available within 24 hours. ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. Thank you so much for supporting MacBreak Weekly, ZocDoc. And I know a lot of you have used it. I've used it now, and it's really fantastic. ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. James, do you want to share a pick of the week? You actually have a very interesting pick, I see, of the week.
Yes.
Yes.
So this is something that I've been playing with. It's a little esoteric, but this is the Mr. FPGA, and it's an open source hardware and software project to recreate classic consoles, computers, and arcade systems via an FPGA processor, which is basically reprogrammable hardware that can become other chips. So the idea is you download the design of a chip like a Motorola 68000 to the FPGA, and then it effectively becomes that processor, which in theory means that you get a more accurate recreation of the thing that you're trying to simulate. It's slightly more complicated in practice, and what is emulation versus simulation, but anyway, that's the basic idea. So this thing can become like a classic Mac, a Commodore 64, a Super Nintendo, pretty much anything from Pong to the PlayStation. And you get this like development board, and then there's,
which looks a little bit like a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, it's exactly the size of a Raspberry Pi. And then you get these additional boards which stack on top. So that one in the picture there was showing it's got a VGA port on the top.
Oh, wow.
And you can have inputs for putting like classic controllers and analog stuff or whatever you want. And it's really fun. And, you know, it can basically do, you know, like, as I say, Pong to PlayStation. So you're talking at least 20 years worth of, computers and things, really nicely. And they're a keep, cause it's an open source project, lots of people working on it and there's new stuff coming out all the time. You know, software emulating stuff.
So it's not an FPGA on the board. It's actually an ARM, it's processor. Both. Oh, there is an FPGA.
It's an FPGA.
Okay.
There's an FPGA and an ARM sort of like sidekick, which can run some of the stuff, but most of the actual work is done on the FPGA.
You're not reprogramming it, or are you?
Yes, you are.
Oh, wow.
You send it the thing saying, here is the circuit diagram and the what the chip looks like, and it becomes that. So it's like a transformer, you know, you can make it cool.
Yeah.
I think it's the same technology Apple used in the Afterburner card on the Mac Pro. I think it used an FPGA on that. And it's really just a way of like creating hardware using software.
I've been really interested in this since I started hearing about these a couple of years ago. Like how difficult is it to flash like a different CPU and different electronics on it? Like once you set it up as a Mac, is it enough trouble to flash it into like a 386 that you think twice before doing it? Or
no, it's not difficult at all. It's like you push a button, you go up to a menu and you say, now you're this.
Oh my God.
It's really simple, and it's got it. The UI of it runs on the ARM processor and it's got like Linux on it. But then you pick the core that you want, and then you can like hook up disks or cartridges to it.
Is there a limit to the number of times you can reprogram it? Does it wear out?
I don't think so. I don't think it's,
that's so cool.
It's really a nice little project, because it's, you know, it's like one of the first kind of open source hardware things that I've seen, of like people just building these additional boards and then putting out the designs, and then anyone can build the boards and sell them. And
I want to build a Lisp machine, a symbolic Lisp machine out of this. I wonder if I could, if anybody's got it's like ROMs, right? You know, in effect, you're going to download the schematics and burn them onto the FPGA.
It's the idea that it's not emulating anything. It is creating a version of that chip in the FPGA. And I've wanted to play with one of these for a while.
And I would say that, you know, there is some stuff where it's like, the chip that they make, it's not exactly the chip. It's a functionally equivalent chip. So sometimes there is an argument that, well, this is really just fancy emulation. But sometimes it's not. It's the best thing I've seen for like running old consoles or computers, you know, Commodore 64 era stuff, and having it feel like the original.
And the software you use is called Mr. Fusion. So that's good. This is great. Now, you gave us a link to the Mr. Devel wiki. And then, of course, there's a GitHub repository of software. Where do you get the hardware?
So there's various ways you can do it. You can pay somebody and they will send you the entire thing.
Or do it yourself.
Or you can do it yourself, or you can do what I did, which was source this developer kit that has the FPGA on it, and then buy from a variety of sources the other boards and put it together. You can buy the bare circuit boards, or you can have the whole thing. and to buy like a fully spec'd one, it's about $500, and it's cheaper than that if you don't need all the pieces.
There's a lot of soldering if you do it this way.
I don't recommend that approach.
Wow, that's very cool. So PCBWay is the PCB manufacturer, and you can get all the parts that go with it. But the thing to do is, and we'll put this link in the show notes, is to go to Mr. Devel on GitHub, github.com/mister-devel.
There's a wiki, and there's a lot of information. There's a Discord. Yeah. So, you know, if you want more details, it's all out there.
Very cool. I'm just fascinated by this. That's amazing.
Yeah. This is why, like, I have a lot of old Macs, and as a display, because I enjoyed like the object as a design. But things like this are why I'm not terribly interested in like getting my SE30 or my 2CI like actually booting up and running. Because okay, so let's get the power supply recapped. Okay, let's make sure there's no corrosion on these things. How are we going to get a keyboard hooked up to it? It's more interesting to see. It's less nostalgia and more, isn't it interesting to create something brand new that will be able to play the old hits the way we like them.
The problem is it leads you into thinking things like, what if I could get one of those really nice broadcast CRT displays, you know, that they used, and like I could hook it up to that, and then I could see what, you know, the Super Nintendo games actually looked like when I played them in.
What is your Mr. currently operating as?
I would say like that my comfort platform is like going back to Super Nintendo, because that was really, so I foolishly decided like a month before my final exams of university, what would really be good was if I bought a Super Nintendo.
Oh boy. How did that work out for you?
In the world.
Yeah.
Wow. Hey, look, I passed perfectly well. It was fun.
Oh, good.
But,
good. All right.
But I don't recommend this as a strategy. But I was playing Zelda back then as well. So, you know, it's like what comes around.
Isn't that funny? You're still playing Zelda all these years later.
Yep. Slightly more complicated.
So this is interesting. This is hardware that it's not a software emulator. This is hardware that actually duplicates the circuitry of a variety of older machines. Very interesting. Mister, and on GitHub, Mister-Devel will get you started. And there's a wiki and all sorts of stuff that you can learn about the Mister. Wow. Andy Inako, pick of the week.
Mine is a simple one. Brad Root has written a really cool screensaver that he tweeted it at me, and I said, okay, screensaver. I like screensavers, and thought I wouldn't like it that much. I thought, okay, whatever. But oh my God, I'm enjoying it a lot. It's called Aline. It's a screensaver written in Swift that all it is essentially a JSON that, will download images from a list of URLs that are continually updated on the screen server. However, what it's drawing from is a collection of constantly updated Bauhaus style abstract art generated by Stable Diffusion.
Oh, wow.
And again, that's why, like, I read that in the GitHub description. It's like, okay, well, maybe that could be okay. But as soon as I put it in, I forgot, like, my God, this artwork I don't know what parameters they're giving it, but it is generating legit beautiful pieces of art that don't look like Stable Diffusion anything. They don't look like AI something. They're just very, very pretty, almost distractingly pretty on a big screen. And it's free. And I think that there isn't enough development of cool screensavers, because when your screen isn't doing something, it could at least make your office or your house pretty. And this definitely does that.
I will say that I wrote a whole screensaver with 18 modules last year for the Relay podcast-a-thon.
Oh, yes.
And that will probably, who knows, I might update that for their next one this year. But that was actually a ton of fun to actually go back and like try and do an After Dark style.
Did you have a flying toaster in your screensaver?
Did I do that? So in the about screen for Dice by Peacock, there is a screensaver which is very much flying toaster.
Oh, that's cool.
But it's flying dice. But that's yes, cool. I did sort of fireworks and all the kind of traditional things.
How fun is that? Where can we get that?
Well, you needed to have backed their podcast-a-thon to raise money for the St. Jude Kids Cancer Charity. So it was an exclusive for that.
And what a generous thing for you to do. That's really cool.
Well, it was a fun thing, and it is for a really good cause. Yeah. So.
I'm impressed. You could write a screensaver in how many modules? 10 modules in a few days?
It was 18 modules, because I got carried away.
Wow. That's great.
Which is not something I ever do.
You could find the, is it Elaine? How do we pronounce that? I don't know. E-A-L-A-I-N.
It is spelled E-A-L-A-I-N. Brad is kind enough on his own personal blog to explain it's like Ali with a very soft N at the end of it. It's Gaelic.
Ah, well, then James should be able to pronounce that too.
Yeah, I live in Glasgow.
It looks very Scottish, doesn't it? And there is a GitHub as well for this where you can see how it works and download it for version 0.1 for Mac OS. I guess the only caution I'd say is that the images come from a Node script he's running at his house that okay, then true. Uploads the images to S3. So this, you know, it's free, which is good. This, who knows how long he's going to want to continue to do that, but
yeah, very he's not doing the Stable Diffusion from his own machine. It's from a work group. And so I haven't seen any repetition really at all from this. So he keeps it fresh. And I don't think that's going to be like up forever, but while it's up,
it's fun. Yeah. Mr. Alex Lindsay, I think it's up to you. To blow my budget.
Not at all.
Everything's
not
been pretty affordable.
Pretty affordable. Yeah. I am recommending, there's this little program that people can get called Apple's Keynote.
Oh, it's free.
Just got updated last week.
Yes.
It has an important feature in it that some people, it's worth talking about just because it now imports SVGs. I know that doesn't sound like a big deal to a lot of people. But for many of us, getting objects in and having them become shapes and then being able to make those shapes into our own custom libraries and be able to break them up. So you can break up the shapes, you can turn them into custom libraries. There used to be an AI to Keynote filter that used to work that stopped working. And if you're building if you build as many presentations as I do, not having being able to have a lot of custom shapes in there it's not an object. So when it becomes a shape inside of Keynote, it means that you can fill it with different colors. You can treat it like a shape. It's a different class of object. And that hasn't been something that it's been something that we've been asking for almost since version one. So it's just been like, and why can't we just import this? And so the last update has made the SVGs available. And so it is those folks that use Keynote a lot, they'll be quickly checking for their updates. I don't have everything automatically updating, and literally people were sending me Discords going, Keynote now has SVGs. So this is a very geeky Keynote user, heavy Keynote user feature that has been added. There's a couple other things. I don't know what they are, but the SVG thing is worth it. And, you know, I still think that Keynote is probably one of the most powerful communication apps ever built. So it's, you know, if you're not using Keynote to its fullest, I would highly recommend looking at the feature set because it's much more robust than everything else.
I think it's one of the best apps that Apple is making at the moment.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. I'm putting together, I have this really complex presentation I'm building right now. And I realized working on it, someone was talking to me about it. And I was talking about how I started really going off on Keynote about how great it is and everything else. And I said, I've made more money with this app than any other app that I've had on my phone. You know, like is it because it's the one that you sell ideas with, you know, and you sold more projects with it than anything else. And I use it up. I mean, I use up all the little animations. I dig deep into, you know, all of my my object order and how they all come on, and I don't have anything. I never have a slide that just pops up and like this is all the information. It's like I'm going to bring this out, these pop these out, move these in, and there's so many great little animations in there that help you tell the story. If you're an educator or someone obviously doing business, I mean, it's just and I've built whole videos with just Keynote. You know, just build the entire video out. And send it to someone, you know, with my voiceover, and it's just done. And those ideas, you know, then pass around really nicely and cleanly. So I'd highly recommend if you haven't played with it and if you haven't taken advantage of it, it's free. it comes with
your Mac and your iPad.
So it works on your, it works on the iPad version, by the way, has all these features that the desktop version doesn't have. I was sitting in Apple has these free educator seminars, which are really great, by the way.
And they were showing stuff like you can just grab with your pencil. You can just grab an object and just animate it by just moving it around with your pencil. just build a motion path like this and then hit animate and you just animate it out. And there's little things like that, even for me were new because I don't use the iPad to design my, I use it to flesh out my or knock out my ideas, but I don't usually use it to refine them. And there's a lot of tools in there as well. So, you can control it with your watch. You can go frame by frame with your watch. And so it's an incredible application that I'd highly recommend if you haven't played with it a lot. And so I'm just using the excuse, the fact that it finally added this, probably the only feature we've wanted more than SVG or equal to SVG is USDZ. And so we're all crossing our fingers.
So I will now explain what Alex just said. SVG stands for scalable vector graphics. These are the images you'd like create EPSs. With like Adobe Illustrator. Instead of a bitmap, they're actually descriptions of triangles, lines, and circles. And so they scale infinitely small, infinitely big. And I didn't know that you couldn't import an SVG.
Turn them into shapes. You can bring line art in the past, but it was treated as an image.
It becomes a bitmap all of a sudden.
It's still scalable, but the main thing is that you couldn't turn it into a true object inside of it. And what that means by turning it into a true shape means that as you, because a lot of times what you're doing in Keynote, or at least what I do, is I decide this is going to be black and white presentation, or this is going to be a colored presentation. And I can very quickly change all those colors of all my shapes to match whatever the look and feel that I'm building into looks like. If you have an image, you can't do that. You can do little bits and pieces. You don't have those handles. So treating it like a shape, being able to break it up. So for instance, there's shapes. You can take a shape in Keynote and select it and then go in and say, I want to, you can combine shapes So
you haven't lost the features of the SVG.
Yeah. Like for instance,
you've got it.
A good example is when you do the Earth shape. There's an unmapped Mercator projection of the Earth in.
Oh, and you get all the countries. Ooh,
it's kind of nice, except for no one needs Antarctica. So what I have is no one cares about Antarctica.
Well, that'll be a real relief to climate scientists everywhere.
But no one cares, and so I break it up into points and then I delete Antarctica and then I save it as a shape. So when I add mine, I'm like, I don't need that. I don't need that part. And so those are the kind of things you can do with an SVG that you can't do necessarily with any of the other image files that you have there. You have to just crop them.
Yeah,
and so it also makes your, if you start using a lot of logos, I like my logos to print well, and which means that I'm bringing in giant pings of all my logos or so on and so forth.
Or an SVG now. And
now
SVG. And it just imports as part of the, the choose command under insert. You can just import it and take it in, and any image will do just fine in there.
Yeah.
That's nice. So thank you, Apple.
It's really useful. And the USDZ one I was talking about is, of course, the 3D format that we hope. It's someday. Everywhere in the Mac, except it appears that it's everywhere in the Mac except for the Office apps. So we feel like there's a certain level of pressure there that they're probably just trying to figure out how to integrate it.
Yeah. Alex Lindsay, thank you so much. OfficeHours.global is the place to watch Alex pretty much any time of the day or night. It's broadcasting early in the morning, and then they take the second hour, make it a YouTube video so you can watch those later. Best thing to do, go to OfficeHours.global. And check it out, and you can see all the stuff. And you can even, if you want, join the Zoom call so you could be there live as part of the
broadcast. Were talking about HTML graphics this morning, which was great. SPX is what we use for our show, and so how those work. Generative art yesterday, of course, we were talking about making a variety of. There's a couple of things, a couple tips there that are pretty useful, and nice. We've embarked on doing. We're doing accessibility on Saturdays for the whole summer. It's usually education, and we had an incredible event. We had an incredible one on Saturday where we had deaf panelists and ASL interpreters, and they were seamlessly talking back. It was us figuring out how to make that all work. So that they were just part of that conversation, and it worked much better than I was a little concerned about it. But you can see here someone talking, but there's other places where There were actually, if you go to other, and so it was a lot of us figuring out, but if you look at like when someone's signing in the main window, you'll see someone signing there. Yeah, there you go. And that's someone talking. And now our, you know, so then what has the ASL interpreter has to swap, you know, switch shift gears and translate to us.
Oh, that's interesting. From our deaf panelists. Speaker is speaking in ASL, and then you have an interpreter speaking it on his headset. Wow, that's really cool. Yeah, I'm really glad you're doing this on Saturday. That's very, very exciting. But all of this information is at officehours.global, and it's really a great gift to the internet that you're doing.
It's a lot of fun.
If you want to hire Alex for your next event, 090.media. Thank you, Alex. Andy Anaka, when are you going to be on GBH in Boston next?
I'm going to be on the Boston Public Library at 12:45 Eastern Time on Friday. So show up. Buy yourself a coffee, enjoy the entire show. Usually they have musical guests on Friday too, so it's a pretty good time. And if you can't be at the Boston Public Library at Friday, listen at wgbhnews.org live or later. It's probably also going to be on the YouTube channel for WGBH News, which is also, oddly enough, WGBH News.
Anything else you're doing? Any other appearances you want to share?
Might have something to talk about in 3.5 weeks.
Excellent. I will set my timer. If this were Reddit, I would have a bot remind me.
So set your timer, but as usual with me, don't hold your breath.
That's kind of the story of my life. Set your timer, but don't hold your breath. I like it. Mr. James Thompson, we are so grateful to have a couple of hours with you and your thoughts. We really appreciate everything you do. PCALC is an amazing thing. DICE is an amazing thing.
It's a pleasure to be here. I mean, I'm quite happy to come back the next time one of Jason's children graduates. Or
every 4 years. Yeah. No, we will have you back soon. I like having a developer on because you get your hands in the gears in the works. And we like to know what it's like in there. Thank you, James.
Yeah, sometimes your hand gets caught in there. That's really what happens.
Don't wear a long scarf, that's all. PCALC.com if you want to get PCALC on the iPhone, on the iPad, on the Mac. It's much more than a calculator, kids. But if you are looking at your iPad saying, why is there no calculator? There is the only calculator, PCALC.
And you can have a free one. So, yeah, just PCALC Lite.
PCALC Lite.
Money.
PCALC Lite, man. There's no reason not to.
So James' message is never trust a longtime Apple developer who still has all his fingers. That means he's not experienced. Yes.
I mean, it was sometimes the damage is internal, but it's always there.
And I will note that the cap being worn by This Is Fine guy, the dog in your lower right of your screen, is available on the PCALC store. If you want a cap with the number 42 on it, that you and the insiders will know what that means. That is a great cap. There's also t-shirts and more. And even a PCALC Pascal pin. So you honor Pascal with your...
Yes, that is our panda mascot, who is indeed named after the language and the mathematician. But it's also Pascal and PCALC. It's kind of very similar.
Oh, yeah. It's almost an anagram. Almost. If you have more than one PCALC, it's an anagram. Thank you, James. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Alex. Thank you all for joining us. We do a Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. If you want to watch us live, you can, 1800 UTC, which means it's dinner time for James. All you have to do is go to live.twit.tv. There's a live stream, audio or video there. You can chat with us live at irc.twit.tv. Of course, Club Twit members get a special kind of, we consider it like the club level. All you have to do on Discord, so you can chat there with us. $7 a month also gets you ad-free versions of all of our shows. Special shows we don't put out in public, like Micah Sargent's Hands on Mac, Hands on Windows with Paul Thurrott, Scott Wilkinson's Home Theater Geeks. It really is a very important part of our monetization these days as advertising for podcasts starts to dwindle. You pick up the slack, and we thank you for doing that. twit.tv/clubtwit. Thank you, club members, for making this possible. After the fact, club member or not, ad-free versions of the show for the club, ad-supported versions available on our website at twit.tv/mbw. There's also a dedicated YouTube channel to Mac Break Weekly that has even more ads, and some of which we didn't put in there. And, of course, the best way to get this show is to subscribe. If you go to twit.tv/mbw, you see links to some of the big podcast applications, but also the RSS, because we are an RSS feed and always will be. And you can subscribe right there and get the show the minute it's available of a Tuesday evening. Thanks for everybody for joining us. Now, I got to say, sorry to say it, time to get back to work, because break time is over and I'm going to Disneyland.
Oh, hey, that's a really nice iPhone you have there. You totally picked the right color. Hey, since you do use an iPhone and maybe use an iPad or an Apple Watch or an Apple TV, well, you should check out iOS Today. It's a show that I, Micah Sargent, and my co-host Rosemary Orchard host every Tuesday right here on the Twit Network. It covers all things iOS, tvOS, HomePodOS, WatchOS, iPadOS. It's all the OSs that Apple has on offer. And we love to give you tips and tricks about making the most of those devices, checking out great apps and services, and answering your tech questions. I hope you check it out.